don't know whether the secretary is here. We were stuck here on the way because of an accident. But even when we went through the accident, I don't know what happened here. We were also stuck here and just went almost in Parliament. It was just unfortunate. It wasn't a good day for the department. Not necessarily for me, but for the department. So maybe their report is not going to be good. But anyway, you are all welcome, and thank you very much for coming here all the way from there. The good news is that we will hear something probably interesting about FTA BT, which is part of the briefing at the end. As a normal habit, we will introduce ourselves, and I see a new member. I have not been formally told. I'm not sure whether he's come to an observer, Professor Mayatule. He used to be our old colleague here. He used to be chair of education. I have heard by rumor that he is joining our committee. I don't know whether he's yet to join us or he's here to observe us. Let me know from him first. Oh, okay. So, he's part of the committee. Right, let's introduce ourselves, therefore, because you can see we have got many, probably, new faces. We'll start here from our desk. Myself, I'm Mabang Lovovich of the committee, and I've got Shanna's my committee secretary here. And I've got my researcher there, Rene Osborne, Mullins or Mullins Osborne. Always mixed which one to start with. And then I'll allow members of my committee to introduce themselves, starting with Professor Mayatule. I've already introduced him, but it's fine, he must introduce himself so you can hear the voice.
I've just returned from the town, so I'm back in Parliament.
Morning, I'm Sana Plaiti, member of the Portfolio Committee for Science and Technology.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I think some will be bored by being greeted, but that's part. I see some people coming in, finding us here and not greeting us. That's an African culture. Find a person, you have to greet that person. Shows a wound, a humanity. Okay, my name is Bobi Mujumi. I am a member of the Portfolio Committee. I come from Gauteng, the region called Greater Tshwane.
I missed that one. Who didn't greet you? I miss that one. You mean me?
No, not me.
Oh, sorry. I thought that you said I didn't give because I thought I greeted. Okay.
Morning. I am Zintetha, member of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Janita Kloppers-Lowens, also a member of the committee.
I think these are our members present today. There are apologies. One member, our whip of committee, is ill and is been put off sick by the doctor until the end of the month.
She's also sick and can't be here today. And then we've got a new member from the DA, Juanita Terre-Blanche, but unfortunately she's also sick, so she attended the apology.
Okay. So, another apology I remember was tendered yesterday. Another member, G. Chief Nkonyane. She's one of our members with many heads. Today he's not in because it's seeming there's an honorary ceremony around this area where his name is being given, is honored by one school, which is going to be named after him. So he's attending that. Yeah, so those are the apologies we have. Okay, let's hear from the DG's delegation. Can you introduce yourself?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. First of all, I'd like to apologize. The Minister and the Deputy Minister could not join us. I am Philip Chwaha, the Director General in the Department. I've got esteemed experts that are traveling with me, and I'll ask them to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and DG. Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Thomas Oftahida. I'm Deputy Director General. Until last week, I was Deputy Director General for International Cooperation. Last week, my responsibilities were changed to Deputy Director General for Human Capital and Knowledge Systems. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Members. My name is Imran Patel. I'm the Deputy Director General for the program called Socioeconomic Partnerships, which is Program 5 in the documentation. Thanks.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Tulani Mavuso. I am the Chief Operating Officer in the Department.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Members. My name is Daniel Adams. I'm a Chief Director in the Department of Science and Technology, responsible for emerging research areas and infrastructure.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Nurunisa Mula. I'm the Director in the Deputy Minister of Science and Technologies Office.
Good morning. My name is Ken Gardner. I'm the speech writer for the Deputy Minister, and I'll also be doing the budget speech.
I didn't hear that, or just can you repeat?
So I'm the speech writer for the Deputy Minister, and I'll also be doing a budget speech. So I'm here to learn this morning.
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Tommy McCordon, Head of Communications at the DST.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Nombui Selo Mukwena. I'm the Deputy Director General for Corporate Services.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Lisbeth Mlangeni. I'm working in the Office of the Director General.
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Lumi Squell. I'm the Acting Chief Director of Strategy and Planning.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Salman Sami. I'm the Deputy Director General for Research, Development and Innovation, which is Program 2.
There's the Honourable Member next to you. I don't know why he's looking at me. I am not yet accepted.
Thanks, sir. Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Leon Abrams, Director of Lighting Officer in the Ministry.
I see that there are some people sitting at the back. We want to know who they are, because even if they are from the media, we want to know from which media they come from. Yeah.
Morning, Pam Benny from PMG. Thank you.
Morning, Kamanita Dudley from Telcom.
Good morning, Chairman. John Yeo from the Cape Islanders. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Elsa B. Britt. I'm from the Burger newspaper.
Go closer to the microphone because everything is recorded.
David Putin from Parliament.
Abel Mputing from Parliament.
Sorry?
Abel Mputing from Parliament.
From Parliament? Doing what here?
Oh, communication services.
Oh, you must say that. I think there's one member I've not seen why she's here. You. We want to know who you are.
Chairperson, good morning, everybody. The names are Ziza Fetrix. I'm from the CSR Parliamentary Office. I keep an eye on what goes on in this committee.
Yeah. I may know that, but other people don't know. They want to know who you are. Right. Thank you very much for your introduction. Without wasting time, I'll give to the DG to lead us.
Thanks, Chair. Before we start, we assume that the members have received the copies of the presentations, but we have additional copies here if maybe they didn't receive, and we'll be happy to distribute them if they don't have them.
Just before you continue, after the session is finished, so that I don't forget, well, may members remain here. There will be a very small issue that you need to discuss about the Rio double SST. That's right.
Thanks, Chair. Our understanding is that you've requested two presentations. One is on just the highlights of our annual performance plan, which I will give, and then the second presentation is just an update on the SKA. I will ask the Deputy Director General, Dr. Valmon Sami, to do that at the end of the presentation. What I'm also not sure whether you want us to just take the presentations together or whether you want us to do the presentation of the annual performance plan first, take questions, and then move to the SKA update. I'm not sure how you'd like to handle that, but
yeah, I think our arrangement was that SKA is just a matter of just updating the committee, so it's not part of really, because of its importance, the committee has to be kept informed. I thought it was useful, but it's just an additional issue. So the issue at hand is what you are briefing us about, and members must interact with you in that, and after that, then you can also then update us about the progress of SKA.
Thanks very much, Chair. So I'll do this presentation. There are a couple of slides and a couple of points in the presentation, which is information that we assume members are familiar with, such as the DST's vision, mission, and goals. But we'll quickly take you through them for completeness. And then we'll talk about the key priorities of the work that the department has been doing in order to lead to some of the current challenges that we have. And therefore, those challenges have led to certain priorities and initiatives that the department is focusing on, which is, of course, contained in the annual performance plan. I will only talk about the high-level issues with the understanding that the details is contained in a variety of tables that are contained in the APPs, and all the Deputy Directors General have assured me that if you need to know the details, they will be available to respond to the question. And then we'll also talk about the need for us to increase our monitoring and evaluation capability, because this is something now, having been in the game for about 10 or so years, we need to reflect back and be able to monitor whether what we started to do some years ago is beginning to make the desired impact. So it's an activity that we will mention as an activity that we really want to focus attention on. And then we also thought, Chair, it is important for the committee to be aware about our investment broadly in science and technology. And then just some financial resources status and conclude. So So we still have the vision of creating a prosperous society that derives these benefits from science and technology. And our mission is to do that via a national system of coordination that is coordinated, and it brings about maximum human capital, sustainable economic growth, and improved quality of life for all. And our goal is to therefore make sure that we have innovation capacity of the national system of innovation to enhance our ability to generate knowledge within the system, and we'll show you the progress we're making in that regard, to develop appropriate science, technology, and innovation human capital to meet the needs of the society. We'll also spend a bit more time showing you how some of the instruments that we have introduced, such as the South African Research Chairs Initiative and the Centers of Excellence, are helping us in this regard, but the challenges that remain, to build world-class science and technology infrastructure. And for that reason that we've asked Daniel Adams to join us here, and then to position South Africa as a strategic international research, development, and innovation partner and the destination. And we have a range of initiatives that we are continuing to do this year in that regard. And Professor Abdi Haider will be still wearing that hat, even though he's indicated that he has moved. So maybe just a little bit of background on our policy instruments. You will all remember that in 1996 there was a white paper which started to introduce this concept of the national system of innovation. We then, in 2002, introduced the National Research and Development Strategy, and it identified science and technology missions, and these missions included biotechnology, ICT, advanced manufacturing, and some of the science platforms included astronomy. In 2004, we were delighted that the department was separated from the arts and culture functions that we had at that time, and then there was a new strategic management model which was introduced, and I will talk to the strategic management model in the next slide or so, because we think it is a very important instrument in terms of defining the work that the Department of Science and Technology does in relation to what other government departments have to do on science and technology. We subjected ourselves to a review by the OECD in 2006. We did this, in a sense, was allowing us to do a benchmarking of our NSI in relation to other systems of innovation. We developed the 10-year innovation plan in 2006-2007, and the idea there was to introduce what we call a knowledge-based economy. A couple of current challenges were identified, and we are busy now implementing some of these policies or aspects of the policy, such as introducing the Technology Innovation Agency, which you will be hearing more about in the next couple of days, the Space Agency, the IPR Act for publicly financed institutions. And therefore, all of this defines the policy of the work that we're doing in science and technology. So quickly, the white paper introduced this concept, as I've said, where we wanted to make sure that we're not only focusing on science, but we also look at how science can make impact into our lives, improve socio-economic conditions. The National Research and Development Strategy 2002 rests on three pillars, essentially to enhance our ability to innovate, to address the issues of human capital development, including what at the time was called the frozen demographics, in the sense that we're not able to renew both the research capacity and the students that were participating in the science and technology system. There was a request to create an effective governance of the science, technology, and innovation system and infrastructure, and as I say, we can give you some update on how that has performed, science and technology missions, as I've said. And then it also proposed a need for us to have 1% expenditure on research development as a percentage of GDP. I have talked about this strategic management model, which was introduced in 2004, where, again, the work of the DST is informed by this strategic management model. So if you can then see that we have essentially three types of activities in science and technology. There are emerging areas which we are showing on the extreme left. To get this fancy pen to work. And then there are sector-specific areas which are in the middle, and there are matured areas right on the right-hand side. Just to give you a sense of what the role of the DST, therefore, was expected to be using the strategic management model, was that we should take the lead as a Department of Science and Technology on these emerging areas such as biotechnology, nanotechnology, sorry for the spelling, and the DST need to partner with other government departments in areas that are sector-specific such as health, agriculture, and mineral processing, and then we were asked not to be involved at all in areas that are matured, such as standard technology-based services, such as the weather services, the forensics laboratory, and those areas. So we always like to remind ourselves and share this with the members so you know what we can and what we cannot do, because this provides us with the guidelines of how far the mandate of the DST. We introduced the knowledge-based economy idea through the 10-year innovation plan in 2007-2008. It introduced the concept of five grand challenges. I believe recently the portfolio committee has been updated on the progress that we are making towards the grand challenges, so we're not hoping to spend a bit more time on this. On the grand challenges, I think there's been a couple of sessions where the portfolio committee has been. And then, of course, we also wanted to pick up the issues that were identified in the National Research and Development Strategy, such as making sure that we manage the intellectual property, and since then in 2008, the IPR Act for publicly financed institutions has been enacted as an act. We have set up the National Intellectual Property Management Office based in Pretoria. We have a number of offices of technology transfer, and we have given the numbers of the targets that we would like to achieve in rolling out these technology transfer offices. And then we are piloting, I think, about five or six centers of competence as a means of bringing university, science, council, private sector to work together to pursue certain opportunities that could create markets, global markets for South Africa. We have a couple of challenges, though. The one is the challenge of increasing the R&D investment to 1% of the GDP. Later on, we'll show you a slide that shows that up to 2006 and 7 we were growing very, very well, but since then things suggest that we are really not even meeting this 1% of GDP. The issue of governance and coordination of the system remains a problem. I've just shown you the strategic management model where the DST has to play a particular role, but if we would like to make sure that the work that we do make an impact into the work of the sectors, for instance, we think that some thinking needs to go into the current government governance and the coordination of the system. We are making some progress in our ability to generate knowledge. We have put instruments for exploiting our knowledge, but there are some challenges that remain, and we'll share briefly those with you. Our ability to work with the private sector remains a little bit of a challenge. On the international funding, I think we're doing reasonably well, and in fact there are some targets on how we would like to continue to leverage our investment for funding that comes from abroad. The challenges of human capital still remain, both in terms of the quantity and quality, and the inequalities, even though, again, we will indicate that there is some progress that we're making in this regard. The partnership with industry and higher education, there is some progress, but we think we can do more. I have talked about monitoring and evaluation of the system as an area of focus. We have developed a range of activities at a pilot scale, both in the area of poverty alleviation and some prototypes that we have developed as a Department of Science and Technology that require to be commercialized. The Technology Innovation Agency has come into the fray, but we still think this is an area that requires some attention in terms of both the funding and the expertise that needs to be provided to higher education institutions to ensure that we commercialize the technologies that we have developed. Upscaling poverty alleviation interventions, we have a number of these projects which in certain instances the portfolio committee is quite familiar with in the poverty alleviation area. And then we have not been successful in developing our provincial innovation systems, working with provinces so that they have activities that focus on innovation, and then innovation work in a number of sectors such as agriculture R&D, forestry R&D. These areas remain a difficulty for the work that we do. So what have we achieved in the last couple of years? You will be aware that the minister has recently announced an additional 62 research chairs, which has recently been rolled out, so we're now sitting at 151. Members of the committee will remember, Chair, that we had set a target of 200 of these research chairs by 2010. We think 151 is not a bad number, but we think, as I will show later on, this is an instrument that is helping us tremendously in ensuring that we have the research capacity that we need to develop the people. Centers of excellence were introduced a while ago. We have 7 at the moment, and we've added 2. One that is operational access, which is, I never remember, Imran, Applied Center, Applied Climate Center for Earth Science System. Yes, okay. So just to give you again a sense of how these instruments are working, this graph shows you the average number of master's students that each grant holder supervises. And we are comparing this, so in other words, we're taking just the grant holders that receive grants from the NRF. And we compare this with the rated researchers, which is the middle column. And then we compare this lastly with the research chairs holders. What this graph shows you is that the number of students that are supervised by those that are holding research chairs is almost double the number that is supervised by ordinary NRF grant holders. So our view is that this instrument seems to be working reasonably well. It was designed precisely for that, because the research chairs holders are meant to be a bit freed from teaching so they can focus on the research capacity. So we're very happy with this. This is for doctoral students. So the previous one was for master's students. This one is for doctoral students. It's the same trend. Again, we can see that the ratio, or the number that is for the SACHI supervisory training capacity is almost double the normal. So maybe we have created a distortion in the system, but we think it is meeting the purpose of what we wanted to do. This also shows the number of students because of the centers of excellence of postgraduate students. And you can see again that because of this intervention, we're seeing a reasonable increase of master's and postdoctoral students that are supervised or are trained by COEs. If you look at the graduations out of the centers of excellence, again, you can see that there's a steady increase from 2004. So both the research chairs and both the centers of excellence as interventions are instruments that we think are making a significant improvement in our ability to get more master's and PhD students. The benchmark in terms of our ability to produce scientific outputs and publish papers is shown on this graph. So you can see two graphs there. The one is just the normal graph of the number of papers that we produce, which is shown by the solid curve at the bottom, as you can see here. And you can see that what this means is that the number of papers are growing up, which is a good sign. But because you are part of the world, even though the number in South Africa is growing up, but if you look at the share of our contribution to the global share of publication, it's also going up, but not at the rate that we would like it to be. So even though we are seeing some success in terms of our ability to produce knowledge, but we think if we want to be global leaders, we need to do a little bit more. And I will show you a slide of the comparison of the work that we do and the productivity of our researchers in comparison with the researchers in other parts of the world, and to show that the only way we can increase this global share is by increasing the number of people that are participating in the system. So this is the start of this international comparison of the international research output per normalized GDP, and we think that we're doing well because you can see that we are better than Brazil, but we fall short of India, Kenya, and Russia. This slide I will spend some time on, Chair, because it's a very important slide. If you look at the first row, this is just what we're showing in terms of our investment in biotech as government. So that's the first row. The second interesting one is the size of the science and technology workforce. And you can see that for Brazil, they have 354,000, 80,000 for Cuba, 8 million for India, 40,000 for South Africa, and about 1.8 million for Switzerland. And this is the ratio of the full-time equivalent per 1,000 employees. So again, you can see this. But let's look at the biotech publications. South Africa, for 40,000 people, you produce 126. So if you just make a rough calculation that 40,000 is half the number of the people you have in Cuba, which is 80,000. We're producing more publications for half the number compared to Cuba. Again, you can do the scale. If you multiply that by, I don't know, by whatever number in order to compare yourself with Switzerland, you can see that we have an extremely productive science and technology workforce in South Africa. That's really the message of this slide. Even if you look at the patents that are filed, you can really see that by and large, I mean, even in Cuba, they filed 159 for half the number, we produced 874 patents. So the message, Chair, is that we should applaud our researchers because despite all the challenges that we have, they really are reasonably productive. Can't remove this thing at the bottom.
According to this slide, I see Switzerland with 1.8 million. Is that the size of their workforce?
Yes, in comparison. SNQ workforce. Science and technology.
So they are very big. And then they've also filed 24,000.
On the patents, they're doing extremely well.
Wow, okay. Thanks. I just want to be sure that I got it correct.
I'm not sure. I didn't do the multiplication to make the comparison 200 times the size, but what about the size of the pattern? I don't know what the factor is going to buy this. Okay, thanks, Chair. So what are the recent achievements? Again, I will go through this very, very quickly. We have, this is not done by us, it's done by mainly our public entity. Prototype for a single device that combines smart card and biometric capabilities for secure user authentication. This is the work that is done at CSIR. Three African Silicon Ecosystem Program research cruises were completed. Technology Stations program is also doing well. Assisted approximately 2,000 clients with 323 prototypes and pilot manufacturing, resulting in so many new products and services. So again, the Technology Stations, which are now part of the Technology Agency, are doing recently very well. CSIR on the sonar 3D imaging, it's an important technology. Recently again, I think it's the Claymont project, 410 smartly designed houses equipped with both solar geysers, rainwater harvesting tanks, and photovoltaic lighting system with a battery backup. So we're just looking and demonstrating how technology can look at alternative design for houses, but making the houses and the living conditions better. The African Traditional Medicine Laboratory has been established at the University of KwaZulu-Natal and is beginning to develop a couple of very, very interesting prototypes. Four of these prototypes in the area of diabetes and some opportunistic infectious diseases and HIV/AIDS have been developed, and we now need to be looking at how we can take this to the next level, biotech company in the fermentation technology and innovation was established. Again, some products for the healing of diabetes have been developed, and then on the SKA you'll have a detailed update on this, so I will leave this for the time being because Dr. Monsamo will talk about this. So just to give you some selected outputs, therefore, and some indicators in the area of Meerkat, we'll be working with the NRF and the project office to upscale the dishes to 64 dishes, and hopefully we'll have 400 jobs that will be constructed, construction jobs that we'll have in the Northern Cape. In the area of products, processes, and services, we hope to have between 12, 13, and 14, 15, 24 new products and services developed for commercialization, 15 new technology-based enterprises that will be supported by TEIA. I did talk about our ability to leverage funds. We hope to leverage approximately 520 million foreign funds that will come into our system, and then approximately 1,500 students, South African students, that are participating in some collaborative activities with our partners. The amount of South African and foreign funds that are spent on SNC-based socio-economic development with the rest of the continent, I don't think, Thomas, that's 165,000. I think it's 165 million rands where we spend with the partners in the rest of the continent, Mozambique, Angola, Kenya, and others. In the human capital development, we hope to continue to support approximately 20,000 honors and masters and PhD students. But as I've indicated, Chair, we think these are small numbers in comparison to what we'd like to do. And again, this is something that we will work with in trying to make sure that we demonstrate the outputs, but at the same time, we think we need to upscale these numbers. And then 1,960 postgraduate students, 8,000 or so researchers supported through the NRF, 85 academic and research sites will be connected. This is a very, very important work that we are doing in ensuring that we roll out the South African National Research and Education Network. And as you know, that it's now been finished, the challenge is to connect universities from the main site in the metros. But we are also thankful to our partnership with the Department of Higher Education because we have a couple of rural universities that are now connected onto the network. We want to continue to provide research equipment grants. And then on the area of indigenous knowledge system, we hope to have an act for the protection and the preservation of indigenous knowledge passed by Parliament. As we have seen that on the African traditional medicine, we're beginning to have some prototypes, and therefore we need to make sure that we have an act that protects and preserves indigenous knowledge. We want to continue to develop patents and prototypes, and there will be a portfolio of these that will be demonstrated in Program 5, and then we want to continue to support small, medium enterprises with the support from the Technology Stations Program supported by TIA. We want to increase our ability to generate knowledge. Again, these are the numbers that we are proposing. On the budget side, and I apologize, on the report itself, I think when it was printed, I think if you look at the expenditure, there is no alignment. We pick this thing up later on, but this is just the indicative numbers that we've received from Treasury. And you can see again that we still are receiving a modest growth even under these difficult economic circumstances. The good news, Chair, is that all the programs, as you can see, are growing in terms of the activities that they've set out for themselves. The other small point is this breakdown of the amount of money that we are spending. 41% still goes to human capital and knowledge systems. So if we want to address, as I said, the increasing of the workforce that is already productive, it seems that the balance is reasonably right. 23% on research development and innovation, as well as socio-economic partnership. and then a small component for international cooperation and resources. So it's an efficient program where they receive a modest budget, but they are able to leverage additional budget. And we are also proud, Chair, to say that we as a department are only consuming a mere 4% of this budget to run the department. So the bulk of the money goes to researchers and scientists. The other good news is that most of the time, if you look at the pink slide, which is the amount that is voted by yourself and the actual expenditure, the difference is always small. We've always kept to less than 2% of the money that we are not able to spend. In fact, I think the numbers this year do indicate that we'll probably spend fairly close to 99% of the money that gets voted. This is the worrying story that I mentioned earlier on. In terms of the amount of gross expenditure on R&D as a percentage of GDP. And then you can see that up to around about 2006, 2007, we were all excited that we were approximately 0.95. But since that time, we can see that the trend is slowing down, 0.93 and 0.92 in 2008 and 2009. And the official figures that we have picked up on the 9-10 R&D survey suggests that that number might probably even be low. So, again, around about 0.87. So it's below point. Let's say it's below 0.9. So the trend is now going down, and this is a worrying trend because we had set a 1% target by 2008. Okay, this is just showing the same thing in terms of the constant runs of 2000. And the even though there is an increase in the amount of money, but as a percentage of the GDP, it is still very, very low. We have outlined the high-level outputs. We are putting measures and targets to achieve these, and then we put operational plans in place, and they provide activities and details. And then, of course, we use these operational plans to do the monitoring on a yearly basis. But one of the things that we'd like to do now, as I've said before, is we'd like to start looking at the data that we need in order for us to monitor what's happening at the system level. I did show you on the knowledge production how we are able to track both our outputs but how these are normalized for the global share. But we think we need to do the same thing on the patent side and on the product type, and this is the capacity that we'd like to develop this year. And we will be receiving, I think, detailed presentation by these public entities in the next 2 days, just to remind you who they are. And I think the organogram, Space Agency, they will all, I think they have all presented to Lani their annual performance plan. They will be tabling these two. This is the organogram of the department. So in conclusion, Chair, we think that in our attempt to build this national system of innovation, some institutional instruments are in place. We do, however, need to bring industry closer to our work. One of the proposals from us is just to probably come here at a later stage and indicate and share with you some of the experiences that we are having on the centers of competence in working with the private sector. It's not enough. That is our attempt to bring them closer to the work that we do, including the tax incentives as the instruments that we are using also to bring them closer to our work. But we think we need to do this a little bit more. We need to coordinate better within government the work that we are doing in the public entities of the national system of innovation. We want to continue to deepen the commercialization efforts because some of these prototypes can have huge socio-economic impact, but if we are unable to get the funding that is required to get these into the commercial domain, we will struggle. Just to give you an example, a project that this committee is familiar with on the commercialization of thin film photovoltaics developed by the University of Johannesburg, it's taken us approximately 7 years to get that project working with UJ and other partners to have a production facility here in Paarl, which will now start producing these thin films. The sad story is that by the time we produce these thin films, the technology has moved forward because the efficiency of these photovoltaic cells is approximately 18%, and the efficiency for the silicon-based cells has now moved to over 25%. So just as I say, it's a very simple story, and a sad story of how our inability to make funds available for the commercialization can make us lose the competitive edge that we would like to do. We would like to enhance social innovation, take some of the prototypes that we have developed through the poverty alleviation projects into meaningful projects by working with a range of government departments and other implementing agencies. We need to improve system monitoring and evaluation. We've given you some examples of how the instruments that we have introduced are beginning to make an impact on the human capital. We would like to do the same thing in other areas. For instance, we expect sometime this year the National Intellectual Property Management Office to give us the inventions disclosure that are happening at the universities and offices of technology transfer as a proxy to monitor whether our innovation capacity is going up or not. We need to think about how do we fund the system. And at the moment, we are working with the minister to develop a financing strategy for the national system of innovation. You've all seen the worrying trend in terms of the numbers for the investment in science and technology as a percentage of GDP. And we think we need to communicate and make sure that the society is excited about the work that we do as a Department of Science and Technology. So, Chair, I think this is where I'd like to thank you and the committee and the experts that they are ready to answer all the questions from the members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG, for the kind presentation. But just before I allow the committee to interact with you, there are a few things of concern. The first, as I said, can you go back to the slide with the entities that are reporting to your department? We have not, as a committee, been told up until now the status of NACI. NACI has simply disappeared from our screens. We no longer receive new reports about NACI. We do not know. We have seen some new appointment, some ministerial review or whatever advisory committee is being formed. The committee does not understand what is exactly happening. And I think it would have been appropriate to brief the committee accordingly about all those dynamics. We just see the NACI disappeared from our screens. We do not know anything. That's the first step. Second concern, we think that the relations that have been concluded with Germany on science and technology cooperation are very important, and we do not know why we were not told about that. Why we were not even invited to the launch, and how do you expect the committee to assist when you launch just in our backyard here in ICC, but we're not even invited. We just see in the papers, we see many interviews in the radios, but we are not told anything. We are very, very concerned. We don't know whether you are deliberately marginalizing us, or we can't expect an error of that grotesque level. We want to understand why we have not been informed. The last one, we want to understand also TIA. TIA, it seems that there are some challenges, but we want you to brief us about these challenges between commercialization, between business and research. The role that TIA is playing, is it
challenges, we sense that there are challenges. So those are the three things that as a committee we want to be briefed on, at least in the session amongst what the members are going to talk to you. I therefore allow the members to interact with you. Any input, members? I see the hands, Honorable Plachi, Muchumi, Gabriel, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, the one of not being part of the launching of the SKA really was quite disturbing for us. We are
sorry,
also
just a little bit. The launching of?
Yeah.
German, not SKA.
Oh, the German, yeah. It was sort of disturbing also. Because when we get to the people at ground level, we explain to them what are these things, how important are these things, and what are their responsibilities. Now, if things are happening, they come back to you and ask you. And now it's difficult for us to answer. Really, that one should be looked into. Yeah, what I wanted to ask was this one of your pilot centers that you plan to set up. Do you maybe have a few target areas that you plan to target on putting up the center? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson, and the thanks to the presenter. Chairperson, the first one, it starts with a concern. Like, I tried to look into this APP document, and I have to turn it, always turn around, until I find myself also turning around now. So I had to put it aside. I am appealing that in future, that if we are to turn the, let's not have to turn the book, at least if it, this as it was, this side out, then just look and come to this page, if it's a matter of saving maybe. So I had to put it aside. But Chairperson, what I'm going to request is that I believe the department here has got 5 programs. And I tried to look at program 1. I can't see it clearly. So I'm requesting that in future when the department comes and present to the committee, they should maybe in this abridged presentation that they put to us should be done according to programs. So that at least I'm able to concentrate on program 1, which I know is administration. And I tried to look into this document where administration is. I couldn't also find it, so I had to put it aside again. So I kept on taking it, putting it aside, going back to it again when my head gets better. So I'm appealing. Chairperson, I believe our responsibility is to do an oversight over the department and maybe other institutions so as to follow on the commitments that they make or that they made so that we are able to hold them accountable in future. That they committed to do this and they didn't do it. Slides 12 and 13 outline the challenges that the department find faced with or confronted with. But what I find lacking or missing, Chairperson, are the strategies to address those challenges. Maybe the person might have mentioned them, but they are not reflected in the document that is being presented. Maybe they are in the document itself, the APP itself. But as I said, that I had to put it aside because of my head turning. I couldn't find them. So I'm appealing that in future that be done, or maybe they should take us through to the strategy that they have to address those challenges that they have identified. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Shall I continue? Thank you. I'm still a new member,
So it's sometimes very difficult to follow. It's new information and so forth. So I would like to add to what the previous member said regarding user-friendly documentation and also user-friendly presentations. Your reference to the fact that the increasement of R&D investment to 1% of the GDP, what is the reason why you cannot reach that target? That's important for us to know. It might be a simple answer for you. And then you also made mention of international funding. What are the obstacles that you refer to when you mentioned international funding? On page 13, should I call it slide 13? The development of provincial innovation systems, you said you are not very successful when it comes, why not? What are the reasons? And specifically, you mentioned agriculture. What are the problems with agriculture? Specifically also the Agriculture Research Council. I believe there are many problems. So I would also like you to explain the graphs on page 15 and 16. When you remember, you've lost me. Please, it might be simple, but I would like to understand. Your research chair as opposed to your all grant holders and the rated grant holders, I didn't get you. Bear with me, please. Yes. On slide 25, you mentioned the 400 construction jobs. Now, I'm well aware of the fact that there's a pre-construction phase, and then there's the construction phase 1 and 2, but what will happen with these jobs after the construction has been completed? Will there be maintenance? What will happen to those people? You also mentioned the partnership with the Department of Higher Education, and I would also like to know, I was a part of the department or the portfolio committee's visit to Germany last year, and the Germans mentioned this exhibition of the 16th to the 18th of April, when was higher education intimately involved, and also what exactly is our partnership with higher education? And there's another one. No, I think after I'm done. Thank you.
In the absence of any further questions, can you respond to this?
Thanks, Chair. I will refer to some of the questions to the colleagues. Let's start with the high-level ones, and then I'll ask the various DDGs to deal with the issue. I am not up to date with why, this is referring to the questions raised by the Chair, why NECI has been taken out of the list of public entities, because I do know that there was an expectation that they would not come here. Maybe Tulani can talk about this, but I think it's a matter that we should be able to address. The second issue raised by the Chair, I was just speaking to DDG Thomas Afterheide, because he was involved on this partnership with Germany. When we also realized that the committee was not at the function on Monday, we asked, I think, one of the chief directors was involved in the activities. According to her, it's not an excuse, was that the invitations were sent to a service provider, and the service provider apparently, for some reason, did not send the invitation to all those that we had identified. But that's what I picked up on Monday. But we're just going to follow up. But I think it was an oversight. We apologize for this. It was not evident.
Oh, I know. What's that?
Do you know more details? Yes, Chair and Honourable Members. Organizing an event like this requires significant logistic support. And we outsource that to a service provider who helps with the coordination and booking of venues and so on, including dissemination and distribution of invitations in this case. We will follow up to establish exactly what happened in this respect. As the DG has already indicated, we offer our sincere apologies for that, but we didn't become aware of this until late in the day. So we will look into it.
I certainly can give you and the members of the committee the assurance that for the other events that will be taking place, because it's a whole year of events, we will make absolutely certain that invitations are circulated to the members of the portfolio committee, and we will make sure that that happens. So we will be following up.
Thanks.
I think we really must mustn't just wipe this thing over. It's a very important. It's a very big error gap that happened for the committee to hear from the media what it was all about. Actually, I fortunately was invited when the Deputy Minister of Science and Technology was here last year to say that the I had a personal meeting with him when he was saying that this year he will be establishing these relationships, they will be establishing these relations with the department. And I was very much surprised when I had throughout the week news that there will be this launch, but I always had thought that maybe we will be receiving in due course the invite. Until I even listened to the DTG in an interview in the morning, I listened to you. In the interview, it was very pathetic with the expression of the committee when actually the meeting was even near, just next door to us. Events of this nature shouldn't be left to the service providers, but even if they have, you have to ensure that, there should have been some checkups, that even when it started, where is the committee, what has happened, who are our invitees, and why these invitees are not here, because we can take it for granted that you wanted to exclude us, then you apologize, but at least we've achieved the purpose of excluding us. You see? And we are not sure for that, but I know for one now I've received a message that the minister was very concerned about it, why we were excluded. You see? So I just wanted that we make that point very strong, because it really disturbed us. And the minister for that matter. Yeah.
Is it possible for Dr. Ofdat Haider to give us a brief summary of what this German South African Year of Science will entail, just to give us a taste of it?
I think that's very correct. Yes, because we don't know. We've been hearing from the papers, and the committee is supposed actually here to be at least briefed about what was it all about. So that if anybody asks us, we're able at least to answer, not from what newspapers are saying. Okay.
We'll give him the opportunity, give him some time to think about it at the end, maybe, of this round.
Yeah.
But we still apologize, Chair. We're not really putting it under the table. We recognize the seriousness. You're right. Even when we outsource, we need to make sure that we pay attention to what the service provider is doing. On the tier challenges, Chair, what we would request to do is that the organization, in our view, is relatively new. And I remember in this portfolio committee indicating that we think for tier to be fully operational, we explained what we meant by operational, we expect that to take about 3 to 5 years. And the reason was that I think we had to incorporate in total, I think about 9 or 10 or 7 entities into an agency that will have to deal with the people issues, different cultures, and then refocus its activity to what we would like it to do. We, at the moment, after last year, picked up the report that was given by the Auditor General, and we have been working, having bilateral meetings with TIA
to address some of these financial challenges, for instance, as one of the things that came out from the report. We've also had bilateral GTA around some key focus areas that the organization perhaps needs to pay attention to. And we think that at this point in time, we are fairly close to addressing some of these high-level challenges. And then one of the issues that we are looking closely at, and I think the committee will be briefed in due course, because I think tomorrow the minister will be receiving the ministerial review committee that she set up a while ago. There are some recommendations around TIA that are in that report, and we would rather, with your permission, Chair, look at that report together with some of the things that we've been addressing with TIA bilateral, and then maybe in due course, maybe halfway through the year, let's say around about September, October, we can then come and brief you on how these challenges are being addressed and how they have, some of them have been addressed, as I say, through the bilaterals that we've had with TIA. We've addressed some of these challenges.
I think it is important for the committee to know which are the challenges, because we have in mind some challenges that have been leveled to us. But I just want to understand that the challenges that you are talking about are the challenges that have come across to us. So can you list some of the challenges?
As I've said, the one challenge is the financial challenge around the issue of an adverse audit to Lani, or I can't remember what the status of funding was it? It's an adverse funding, I think, yeah. So we have been working with the CFO, our CFO and their CFO, through the leadership of DDG Corporate Services, Mem Kwena, to help the organization to set up those challenges, to address the internal controls that we address there. Some of them at the highest level were related to the fact that TIA had inherited companies where the previous entities like the Innovation Fund and the BRICS had funded. And therefore, if they have these companies that they are funding, these should be considered as subsidiaries of TIA, and therefore when they produce their financial or not financial statements, they need to have consolidated financial statements that also include the financial status of these entities that they own. So that was one of the key things on the finances. On our side, our colleagues at Strategy and Planning have been working with TIA to assist them to report on the balanced scorecard that our minister has asked all our public entities to report on. In other words, finance is one reporting, but we also wanted them to report on other things such as, you know, the financial sustainability of the organization, people, the learning of the organization. I think there are about five of these. So we again have been working with them on addressing that. The one part that we are working with them on was an analysis of the investments that they inherited from the entities that they had, and what decision the organization has made in keeping some of the investments that have been made, but also to identify which of those need to be taken to the next level, and then maybe an indication of which new investments that they would like to target and spend time on. And we recently, in fact, interacted with them on their annual performance plan around how we need to make sure that we focus on the key mandate of the organization, which is to work mainly with publicly funded institutions, work with offices of technology transfer to identify innovations that they have and take them to the level where these innovations can be funded by other funding agencies such as the IDC and other venture capital firms. This is an area where we're still working very, very closely with TIA,
And at the right time, as I said, we think this will take us another 3 to 4 months, and then we'll be able to come and give perhaps a joint presentation by ourselves and TIA at that time to the committee. Thank you. So,
those are the only challenges that you think exist. Then at least formally, I think we have picked up. We might have others that people come and talk to you about, you know. And let me tell you what they say, people. They say that TIA seems not to know what it is supposed to be doing. One, TIA is not supposed to concentrate on research because it's not about research and development. But TIA also should not concentrate on the work that should be done by IDC and trade and industry and the like, Institute of the like in terms of marketing and commercialization. TIA must be a tool to move research and development into commercialization. That is what it should preach. It should not be this end of the pole or that end of the pole. It should be a bridge. So that's what people are saying to us, that we monitor this, because it seems that it doesn't know what it is doing. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I think that's what you mean by saying, you know, the mandate and make sure that what's written in the Act is interpreted. We agree with you. That's what we're working on with the organization, and hopefully in 6 months' time we'll be able to pick that up. But the committee, I think, has an opportunity tomorrow perhaps to probe even deeper along these lines. Okay. Right. Honorable Mutumi, yes, we apologize on the layout, and I'm glad that Tommy from Communication, who is responsible for the layout, I agree with you. Even when I was just looking at it again carefully in the last couple of days, I also find myself doing the same, so we'll fix that. And the corporate services, I think it will be sharply included in the next plan, but I'm sure Nambusela could broadly talk about what they do, just roughly for information here, and some of the things that they're setting out to do, including how they help us with the finance and issues of the supply chain and other issues that they do. And then let me come to Honorable Blakey. I'm going to ask Mr. Imran Patel to talk about some thoughts around some of these pilots and where we have them, some of them, maybe specifically around maybe on the agronomy work, on the work that we've been doing on the Claymont work and on the Clep Bay as pilots, but with an indication as to if we roll them out, where would we like to have them. Now let me come to slides 12 and 13, I think, from Chumia on the challenges, I think. I'll probably, with your permission, Chair, try to go through them one by one. Maybe what we did in the presentation, as we were talking about some of the proposed ideas, we never made a one-on-one reference. On the increasing R&D investment to 1% of the GDP as a first challenge, in the delivery, in the performance agreement that the Minister signed with the President, she has been asked, and this is a public document, to provide Cabinet with a strategy to increase the investment to 1.5% by 2014, what strategies we need to do. And this document, I think, is near finalization, and we'll be tabling this document to the Minister fairly soon. But in order to couple your question with the question raised by Honorable Klopas Lawrence as to why we haven't met the 1.5%, the 1% is twofold. The one is that the GDP has also grown, and it's probably, I assume, grown faster than the investments that I think have been earmarked for science and technology, because this is a ratio of your investment but against the GDP. The private sector has continued to invest, but I think the second reason is that I think even on that increase, the proportionate increase by government has not probably risen at the rate that we think on the public entities needed to grow. we've done the analysis of this, and again, Chair, through you at an appropriate time when that strategy has been accepted by the Minister and it's a public document and has been tabled and discussed by Cabinet, we would be more than happy to give you the details of the analysis that we have done. But these are just some of the reasons why I think we've not been able to get the 1%. So I think that this deals with it. The governance and coordination of the system, I did present, Honourable Mutumi, the strategic framework model of type 1, type 2, type 3, if you remember those three graph the pillars and what the DST ought to focus attention on. And we are of the opinion that even though that has allowed the DST to focus attention on the areas that we have developed, such as biotechnology, which we think we've done reasonably well, on nanotechnology and some of these cross-cutting areas, it hasn't allowed us to make a meaningful impact on the work of Type 2, where we have, as a Department of Science and Technology, work with other government departments in order to have, for instance, a sector strategy on agriculture, forestry, or any other sector that is also supported by research and development. And therefore, we are of the opinion that the current arrangement where the DST's role is defined in the way that it's defined in the strategic management model perhaps needs to be reviewed. Because if you want, as a Department of Science and Technology, to have an R&D strategy in support of agriculture or an R&D strategy in support of forestry or mining, unless the department that you work with sees the value of having that strategy, it doesn't happen. And there's nothing legally or any other instrument financially that allows the department to do that. And therefore, in certain instances this works, in certain instances it doesn't work. Fortunately, again, in the Ministerial Review Committee, there is a proposal on how perhaps the governance system of the science and technology ought to be looked at for this horizontal integration, as we call it, but also with the vertical integration in terms of, you know, how do you centrally locate the role of science and technology if it has to make the impact across other sectors of government, including provinces. This is the question that you've raised around why have we not succeeded in getting provincial innovation systems. We don't have any provincial competence as a Department of Science and Technology, and therefore if we come to the Western Cape provincial government and we say we would like to do this with you, they may choose to say this is not a priority for us. Go to Gauteng, they may say this is not a priority for us. So we've relied on universities working with the private sector, but so at a program level, there are activities that are happening. But at, if you like, a higher level government governance level, even using the intergovernmental relations, we don't have any legislative instrument that allow us to do this. So these are the underlying reason, and they relate really to this point of governance, Honorable Mutu. Building knowledge, generation capacity, and exploitation. I think here I've indicated, you know, the graph that shows that we think we are increasing our publication, but if we compare to the global size, we still aren't growing as much as we would like. And we are proposing that we really put more resources on the instruments that we've put in place because they seem to be working, and we just generally need to increase the pool of people who come to science and technology. I showed the slide of how productive the number, how productive the researchers we have are, but you cannot squeeze more juice from them. You just need to bring in more people into the science and technology system. International funding, I will leave that to DDG after Haide. Human capital, we have a strategy that we are about to finalize now on human capital, and this will be presented to the portfolio committee once it's gone through the other structures. Government, industry, higher education partnerships, we are succeeding in this regard. I mean, we've been looking at the three programs. We have introduced the centers of competence as one, and the colleagues in Program 5 are looking at the R&D tax incentives and how we can make them to be administratively less of a burden for industry so they can take them up. So that, we hope, are some of the instruments. Whether they will help us, of course not. I did talk about system monitoring and evaluation, and that we need to develop this a little bit more. Again, if there's a need for us to come back with the details, including the work that we are doing to fund
Research Innovation Management System at the NRF as a source of collecting the data that allows us to monitor where investments are, the productivity of the researchers, the output of the students. We will be using that information management system to get more data. On the commercialization, I think both on the financing strategy, we are looking at that, and as well as the upscaling, there's an internal discussion around perhaps looking at an institutional arrangement within the DST that is going to take these projects to the next level. Recently, when we were developing and setting up the National Intellectual Property Management Office, we realized that we need to have a government component as an instrument that will work with our stakeholders, not closely related to the department, but it still reports directly to the minister. So we are looking at these models for the upscaling of some of these pilot projects that came from the, and then we're working closely with the IDC as well to look at some of the funding that they have to be aligned to some of the work that we've been doing as a Department of Science and Technology. And then I think I've talked about provincial innovation and sector innovation challenges. So I think that addresses the challenges of Honorable Jumi, and then the Imran will take the challenges of the piloting, upscaling 1%, Honorable Klopas Lawrence, I think we've talked about that. Obstacle on international funding, DDG Corporate Services, will deal with that, provincial innovation, sector innovation. Slide number 25, 400, yes, 400 construction jobs. We think that after the construction of the 64 dishes comes to an end, maybe we'll be lucky and we will win the SKA, and therefore the workers will be involved in the construction of the other aspect of the telescope. Of course, it's not going to happen immediately. So the reality is that at the end of that, there will be nothing for them in the construction of the 64 dishes because the project will come to an end. However, there will be different types of jobs that will be required for the Meerkat in terms of the people to operate the telescope, both on site as well as remotely, and then other high-end skills that will then be required for the operation and making sure that the instrument continues. But on the construction, I'm afraid, no matter how much we try and hide this, there will be, like it happened with the World Cup, unless there are other projects where people would be involved, hopefully in some of the presidential infrastructure projects, the people will be absorbed there. Now, you wanted me to explain, I hope I need somebody to unlock the computer. The slides on that talk about the productivity of the researchers, and I'll do that in a moment, and then I'll hand over to Mr. Mavuso on the NECI, Mr. Patel on the sites that have been identified, Nombu Isero if she wants to talk briefly about Program 1, and then Professor Afterhide both on the leveraging funding as well as maybe just a quick update on what we're trying to get on the Year of Science Chair. So let me just start by spending a bit more time then explaining to Honorable Klopas Lawrence what I meant here. Yes. Now, the first graph, the blue graph, it's the grant holders that receive grants from the National Research Foundation. So professors, lecturers, senior lecturers at the university, they get a grant from the NRF, and as part of the grant that they get, they are expected to train students. So this is every person who receives a grant from the NRF. The second one, the purple one, and I'm sure I will be wrapped over knuckles by this color by some colleagues, so maybe let me show them by this, because this might not be purple. The middle one. These are grant holders who are rated at the NRF. You know that at the NRF they have researchers that are rated from T rating, which is emerging researchers, to A rating. And then the third one, these are grant holders who are holding a research chair at the university, the 151 that we've rolled out. So we're saying if you look at the average number of master's students per grant holder, assuming you normalize the amount of money they receive, you'll find that if you look at the general grant holder, that's the number of students that they will be training, or that they will be supervising. But if you look at the one that has a research chair, instead of 1.5, they would have 2.25. So essentially, really the message to take home here is that somebody who holds a normal research grant trains fewer students than somebody who holds a research chair grant. That's really what this means. And again, it then shows from 8, 9, and 10. You can see that in some of these instances, you have doubled the number of students that a grant holder that has a research chair is able to train. So essentially what we're saying is that if we can increase the number of these research chairs, you can then have the ability to train even more students than the normal grant holder. So that's for the master's students. This is exactly the same for the PhD student. And then I moved into the Centers of Excellence, which is again another targeted instrument by the Department of Science and Technology. We've got 7 of them. And what we are showing that since we introduced these Centers of Excellence, we've had an increase in the number of postgraduate students and that are supported by, so they are able to take more master's and PhD students, and this just shows the growth. And this is just single out the doctoral students that have graduated. So again, we are seeing an increase. So essentially what we are, the message we are communicating that these interventions that have been made seems to be making a difference in our ability or in our attempt to increase the number of either supervisory capacity or our capacity to produce masters and doctoral students. I hope this explains. And then, Mr. Mavuso?
Just before you conclude, I'm sure she would also like to know about centers of competency in terms of this. How much do they compare in this effort? What achievement they have done?
We don't have the information to be honest today, but it's some information that we can introduce. The other small point, Chair, that we would like, even when we try and look at that information, we'll have to be careful. The Centers of Competence have been running for about 2 years. So whether we have enough data to be able to do a meaningful comparison, we're not so sure. But we can still do some quick analysis because some of them, even though they have formally worked as Centers of Competence in the last 2 to 3 years, they've probably been working together in one form or the other. So we'll be able, we can extract that for the committee, perhaps in the next month or so we should be able to have that. Thanks.
For the sake again of new members, can you explain the difference between centers of competence and centers of excellence?
The salient difference is that in the center of excellence, it's usually a physical or virtual center that is based in a university context in order to enhance the ability to produce knowledge in the area that has been identified. A center of competence is interested in pursuing a market opportunity, not necessarily to increase knowledge production, but the key focus is how do you exploit knowledge so that you can get benefits economically and, of course, socially. And the second feature is that they pool capacities that exist in a number of institutions. Just to give you an example, one center of competence is on titanium. I think I've shown this before. And in that competence, we probably have, I think, about 8 universities, I think 2 or 3 science councils, and maybe 4 or 5 private sector. So it's a consortium made up of people from the private sector Science Council and University that are bringing different expertise that is required in order for us to have a global footprint in the production of whatever area. In the area of titanium, we hope to produce industrial products, we hope to produce aerospace products, and we also hope to produce products for the medical application. So I think that's probably the rough difference. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. Just in response to the question that the Chair asked on why NECI was not listed as one of the entities, Chair, NECI has not disappeared. It's one of the entities, but obviously, as we know, that NECI currently is not a standalone entity. It operates as a component of the department, even in terms of its budget. But they are in existence. They continue to do the advisory work that they did to the minister, and they do stand ready to come to present as they've done in the past, its work to the portfolio committee. I do recall that they came here on the last time, I think they were here, it was the 18th of October 2010 to present the annual report. But I think we'll just check with the secretary when they do the scheduling of the NECI. We'll come to the committee and do the presentation.
I'm not sure about that. I think a researcher, can you brief us? There is some documentation or something that was sent by our researcher. Can you raise some of those things that you gave to me about NECI?
Yes, it's just that before, when all the other entities tabled their reports to Parliament, NECI did at the same time, and last year they didn't. And that's when I just followed up with Leander as to what's happening. I have managed on Monday, I was fortunate to meet Professor Barstram, who has indicated that there was, I think, a problem with the service provider in terms of printing the report. So this morning he sent me an electronic version of the annual report, and he states that the hard copy version will be available within 2 weeks' time. But that's around logistics and having the report printed. Why they didn't follow the standard format of presenting their reports with the other entities last year to Parliament is something that we don't have information on.
That's not that's not the only problem, because there are rules and regulations in Parliament. They ought to have, if they were not presenting a report because of the reason that the researcher is giving, they were supposed to have written formally to Parliament that they won't be able to present a report because of this and this logistical problem. We didn't receive that. That's why we don't know about them now. And instead, we've seen some committees emerging that are advising the minister without a proper mandate given to Parliament. And Parliament is here to oversee all those kinds of things. They can't, everywhere to allow any entity to come as it likes. And if it is not ready, doesn't come, doesn't say anything, the constitutionality of Parliament would simply be in question. And so I think, therefore, it's very important that you go and discuss with Professor Barstram or whoever and give a formal report to Parliament, which you must present to the Speaker, because it is a problem.
Thanks, Joe. We'll address the matter. Thanks.
Thanks, DG. DG asked me to comment on our science and technology for social impact portfolio, and specifically the comment on additional sites. It's not an easy question to answer. In terms of, say, for example, in Claremont, what we were doing in that housing development, was working with the provincial government, working with the city council to introduce new technologies in that context. DSD is not responsible for delivering houses. Neither does government do this. They send it out to contractors in a big way. So for us, the Claymont initiative, as an example, has been successful in showing how you can introduce more efficient technologies around, solar, and other energy efficient technologies, etc. What we're spending time now doing is working with the Department of Human Settlements and others to look at what needs to be done in order for those things that do work, and we've shown in practice that they are able to work, can start featuring into long-term housing development. So that's an example of that project. It doesn't make sense for us to do Claymont all over again in another area, because that's not our responsibility. It becomes very difficult to do that, to select another site, etc. What we wanted to prove through that initiative has been proven, and the responsibility now is how to take that learning and influence delivery, housing delivery in a big way. Some of our other initiatives are different. For example, we have a whole range of what we call sustainable livelihoods type projects, where we look at using either science or technology. It doesn't necessarily have to be a technology. We say talk about science and technology. For example, demonstration agronomy, or being able to cultivate wild plants. You know, they might exist in the environment, but to sustainably produce them in cultivation takes time, or aquaculture is an example. So in those projects, what we do is we identify a site mainly through our entities, because they are on the ground, they understand, like the ARC and the CSR, and they come to us with Stellenbosch University, etc., with areas where we see value in trying out something new. And we would then fund that particular initiative. And the idea is there's two parts to it. One is, once we've done our work to get something started, it needs to be taken over to make sure it's sustainable, and that if there are opportunities for growth, they continue to grow, as an example. So we're spending a lot more time working with provincial growth and development agencies, etc. And there's another part to it, is to say, if we've successfully shown how something can be done, we should use that information to influence, for example, rural development or agricultural development, etc. And that's why a very positive development at the moment is that we have these outcomes. And there's a specific outcome, outcome 7, where a lot of our projects are featured, and we raise this. And in that way, people get to know what is possible to do through science and technology. So the whole area of upscaling and growing out and developing it is not a simple case of taking one project and trying to do that project in 100 sites. We don't have the budget for it. We don't have the mandate for it. It's not our responsibility, etc. So we have, in each case, the housing area, we have ways of taking forward now, and we're looking at that. In water, we have a very successful project to look at rural water development. There, we are taking it to two other sites. We started in the Eastern Cape. We're now moving to Limpopo and Mpumalanga. We have new areas of focus in terms of demonstration agronomy. A new project that is coming up in Limpopo is around the beneficiation of tea, as an example, looking at value-added products from tea. But that's because tea grows in that area and has the tea estate. We have existing projects all over the country looking at other agricultural crops. And then in terms of the technologies, like housing technologies, we have some additional projects. We have a project in Muden that still continues. But the Claymont one, we've done. We've launched. Now what we're doing is we're writing up the case study around it, trying to do the costing. And then very important for our work is not only to demonstrate it. We need to keep monitoring the project, because new technologies require social change, and people may not. You know, for example, the kind of equipment that is placed might go into disrepair because people are not maintaining it. So we need to study this. So most of our projects, we want to introduce a kind of a long-term monitoring and evaluation component. So I think that needs to clarify, because there's always a confusion about what our role is. In terms of the strategic management model, our role is not large-scale rollout. our role is to demonstrate and to look at new approaches and then to help come up with solutions on how it can be rolled out effectively all over the country, not to another project site. I hope that answers. Did you, can I just comment that we will come to the Portfolio Committee, Chair, as well. We've just completed the 2009-10 R&D survey. It's going through its quality control processes internally within the department, etc. And I'm sure there will be occasion in the next 4 or 5 months to present that report together with R&D Tax Incentives report, etc., to this Portfolio Committee, because I think it will give members a better, a richer understanding of how we calculate R&D expenditure. You know, there are different components, government, business, and in each of those sectors, things are changing, and it's too brief in this hearing to go into those details. We don't have the professionals with us as well, and I think we'll come and do a special presentation as soon as the report has gone through to Cabinet and has been approved for public release and to present it to Parliament.
Thanks, TG. If I may just take the committee through briefly on the key activities that we are responsible for in corporate services, maybe starting there, it's the first one being financial management, which includes the balancing of the budget at the end of the financial year and the monitoring of the expenditure throughout the year. We also are responsible for information systems, which includes information technology and knowledge management. We also are responsible for communication in the organization, both internal and external communications. We are also responsible for legal services and the security management in the organization. Maybe the key strategic issues that we would say we would like to achieve in the next MTF period, starting with the sourcing of resources for the organization for the project as planned in the annual plan for the organization, and also having a framework for information systems that informs the strategies and also the strategies that address the knowledge management, which is not it's kind of a new program that we're running in the organization. All other strategies in terms of financial management, communication, security, and legal services will be part of our activities for this year in order to support the rest of the organization in their programs. And if there are any other maybe specific questions, then we can deal with things.
Thank you, Chair DG. With response to the question by the Honourable Robert Lawrence, South Africa is increasingly being regarded internationally no longer as a development partner, but as a member of the emerging economies, and increasingly being treated as an equal partner in a range of different domains, and specifically in science and technology. We do still currently have the opportunity to be recognized as development partners with respect to some of our international partnerships. So there's a dual status that South Africa has at the moment. In part, it's seen as a member of the group of developed countries. In part, it's seen as a developing country. The impact of this in terms of our access to international funding is that the amount of funding that is available to us as a development partner, as a developing country, in other words, is gradually being decreased as countries are beginning to restructure their relationships with South Africa as an equal partner. In science and technology, what this means is that we are increasingly being allowed access to larger and more substantive research cooperation activities with our partners, but decreasingly we are able to attract development funding. As a result of that, there's probably in the future a general downward trend in the amount of international funding that can be leveraged as a result of this change in South Africa's status. In the more immediate recent past and in the near future, the international financial crises have impacted significantly on our bilateral relations with some countries. And we quite often have the experience where initiatives that we had agreed on with bilateral partners get postponed or cancelled at short notice because they found they don't have the funding available for it. So the access to international funding is being compromised by these two, to some extent being compromised by these two activities. But my last comment on this, Chair, would be that I think one needs to understand that this measure, this target in our and indicator in our annual performance plan is really a very rough proxy of the value of our international cooperation relationships, because the value of the networks that our researchers are exposed to in the international cooperation activities is very difficult to measure. The best proxy we've got for those networks is the full cost of the research activities that are supported on our partner side. In other words, cooperation activities with Germany, for example. How much of the research cooperation activities in Germany are funded by the German government in Germany in order to support the cooperation with South Africa? And we have a measure of that. That cost is of the order of between 400 and 600 million rand on an annual basis. So our South African researchers are part of research networks internationally that are valued at least half a billion rand on an annual basis. It fluctuates, of course, which is quite a lot less than the cash we leverage, but together it gives you a sense of the magnitude of the international cooperation activities. Turning, Chair, to the second issue that is still outstanding, the question about what exactly is encompassed in this Germany-South Africa Year of Science. Just very briefly, Germany is our third most important international partner, after the US and the UK. And early last year, or middle of last year, Germany proposed to us that we should establish this Germany-South Africa Year of Science to celebrate the bilateral relations in science and technology between Germany and South Africa. They had previously launched such years of science with their other key strategic partners, such as India and China, Israel, Egypt, and then they wanted this to do with us. They wanted to do this with us as well. And essentially, Honourable Chair and members, this is a year in which we will hold jointly various events like workshops, exhibitions of research materials and outputs. So it's a series of events structured around the theme of the year and clustered within thematic priority areas that we have agreed, for example, climate change, human capital development, urbanization, four or five such themes that we've identified, and the events that will be held are clustered around those themes. What we can certainly do, Chair, and honourable members of the committee would like, we could in a few weeks come with a more detailed briefing, because the projects that have been selected, or the project list that will be implemented during this year, is about to be finalised. I think it's not completely finalised, but it's about to be. So once that has happened, we certainly could come back here and provide you with more details on the sorts of initiatives. Certainly, especially in the light of the point that was raised earlier on, that the Portfolio Committee was very regrettably not involved in the launch, I think it is certainly something that we jointly, the department and the committee, should look at, is a way of formally involving the Portfolio Committee in the final event, the concluding event, because that will be the other big event. The one big event was the launch event. We've expressed our regret about this. But there will be a final event, and I think it would be very appropriate for the Portfolio Committee to be part of that event. And the details of that are still to be developed, because that will only take place in a year's time in Germany. But in the meantime, we could provide you with more information on the other events that would be planned in between now and then.
sorry, I don't want to respond. There's another thing that I just remembered that you must also look into. You know the do you participate in this Euroscience Forum? The forum it's Euroscience. I don't know. O is standing for what, I've forgotten, but it's Euroscience something forum. I met with them with the World Science Forum. They are meeting in July in Dublin. They said there are some professors in South Africa that are part of that forum. But another thing which is very important, it's unfortunate that it reached me when almost it was that time. The Astronautical Congress wants 12 students from here. So I think that what we call it, science, youth strategy into science, what is it? I think you must start looking into that, because look, we've missed it, because they closed in February for the intake. There were students, if you remember, when we hosted the second Congress here. The next one is in Italy, in Naples. And they have written to me wanting 12 students. Especially interested in astro-related sciences. But I think you must follow it up so that at least you prepare students for the next year, because they do have European and international students participating in that forum. They've got a session of students. And if we are to host SKA, we really need to be part of that. We must just follow that one up. The Astronautical Congress. I think Martinez will be a good link to that. Martinez. Dr. Martinez. Oh, there's a member with a hand.
Chair, I'm not sure my question was answered about the focus areas on the pilot of centers. The piloting of the center. The pilot center.
Pilot center?
Yeah, there were centers that were, there was a pilot for establishing centers.
Centers for what?
For,
they must be centers for something.
Yeah, the center, it was only said the pilot, and there are some pilot projects that are going to be set up as pilots for centers.
We understood the question as we have piloted a number of initiatives in poverty alleviation in certain areas, and this is what Mr. Imran was saying. And we were saying that some of those pilots have reached a stage where they need to be rolled out to other parts of the country. And we are having a problem in doing that, because we are either not a department that can roll out a pilot on the housing project that we have talked about in Claymont, nor the pilot that we have been sharing with the portfolio committee in Hondeklip Bay, because our attempt is to just demonstrate how science and technology can be used in fish farming in Hondeklip Bay. And after we've done it in Hondeklip Bay, it can be done elsewhere, but we can't choose where it can be done. We thought the question was about that. Through you, Chair, I think the challenge on this matter, again, is about the issue of governance that we've talked about. Even with the housing, we have to work with the Department of Human Settlements, as Mr. Patel indicated, to have them saying this is a technology that we would like to endorse and we would like to use it for the building of all the houses. Provincial innovation systems, as I have indicated, if the provinces of the Western Cape think that the fish farming for abalone is an important program for them and they would like to roll them out, we say here is the spec. How you roll it out to employ more people, we can't do that. We don't have the resources nor the mandate to do that. The government of Northern Cape wants to do the same thing, have fish farming on other types of fish, yellowtail that we have piloted in the Eastern Cape. We can't do that, but we have the blueprint on how you can do it. That's really how we interpret our mandate and how we can play a role. We try and influence these things, but we don't have any legislative mandate no funding instruments to roll them out. That's essentially the point. Thanks.
This question wasn't mine, Chairperson, pardon me, but I think it's the question that my colleague referred to. I believe it's on slide number 10. That talks about centers of competence, where Dr. indicated that they are piloting about five to six centers of competence. And what I thought the question would be, where these five or six centers, I think you have already identified the centers, these five or six centers. Where are these six centers in the country?
The question.
Oh, this is mine then. Okay, this is mine. The center. So I hijacked on slide number 10, where it is, the 10-year innovation plan, where you intend having a pilot of about 5 to 6 centers of competence. So let's find out where are these.
Well, Anza, just take all of them. Maitra also wanted to.
Thank you, sir. My first question relates to the last comment of the frustration of the department to penetrate provinces and other. I'm just trying to check, they have this good idea. I do not know how far they have gone selling them to. I'm putting my gap now as a person who has been dealing with NGOs who discover this and that. I lead them to the department, organize that, they sit formally. That Western Cape, here is this idea, and they take it or not. I don't know how far the department has formally, officially gone to the different provinces to sell what they have so that they take or not. My other comment, it has to do again, if I put my cap from retirement. I was a member of the Council of Universal 14. For every 10 doctorates, we find there's only one company. The rest is from Zimbabwe, you name it. And when I'm looking at this statistics again, that is the question that I'm having in mind. When we have the doctorates going up this way and that here and there, how many of those are South Africa? What are we doing in order to get around? Again, in your page, slide 37, you have a concern about the gross expenditure on R&D as a percentage. I'm not sure that concern as to what is the real issue, what is this committee supposed to do to assist you in order to change that trend that is going down. Again, sitting where I'm seated, I'm putting my cap of my community in Ngabane. In your last comment, you said you want us to go and tell the world about science and technology as what it does. This is my first meeting here. When you say science and technology, that never meant anything to me. It was something theoretical. So it was kind of a department that I could not take to my Ngabane and say, people, this is to me, I guess that I want to be schooled, to be excited and say, I want to invite the minister or deputy minister to my constituency. If I do that, these are the issues that affect the people little around the ground. They have to be excited about this department.
Thanks, Chair. Let me start with my recollection, and maybe Imran would help me with the centers of competence, Honorable Mutumi's question. We have one on unmanned aerial systems. South Africa, over the last years, has developed a very, very strong capability on manufacturing these unmanned aerial vehicle systems that you can use to monitor things, agriculture, people, and various. And we've suddenly realized that this is a competence that resides in a number of institutions in South Africa, and the CSIR, I think, is hosting these unmanned aerial systems, but includes Denel and some other aerospace companies. It involves the Central University of Technology here, and again, we can give you the full consortium. It's hosted at the CSIR. The second one is on titanium. I've explained that in the earlier. The other one is on biocomposites. It's hosted again by the CSIR based in Port Elizabeth. But there are a number of institutions that are bringing in the technology from actually raw material. I remember a couple of years ago in Staterheim in the Eastern Cape, we were working with a group there. I think it's ARC that is developing this plant, which is similar to Dacha, that is used for producing these fibers that are used in the biocomposites. CSIR is leading that one. The other one is information security. The project that I talked about a prototype on identification system in the smart card, that's the first product that this information security is developing. And then the fifth one is the hydrogen. South Africa centers of competence, they are hosted in three universities. One, it's on infrastructure and hydrogen production, is CSIR in the University of Northwest. On the catalysis, using catalysts that you need in the fuel cell, it's University of Cape Town and Mintec. And then the third one on the integration and production of small systems is the University of the Western Cape and some private sector companies. So that's just, and I think there are probably one or two others that are not in the list, but we're piloting these things. We just want to see how the consortium is working and how, you know, we can penetrate some global markets in some of these areas. Professor Maitula, we do acknowledge upfront that our ability to share with the world what we do in science and technology has not been optimal. But we are now, I think, working with the public entities that we work with to accelerate, I think, this drive and find a way in which we can excite the public in general about science and technology. I think at the youth level and at the school level, we seem to be making a tide, and we can share with you a range of activities that we are doing in that regard, or probably even better, the NRF, the agency called SAFTA, can share with you a range of activities from astronomy, space, nanotechnology, and other areas where they are really trying to get youth excited about this. There's a program on TV, if we have the time and the chair allows, which is called TOMS, where we are exciting youngsters about science and technology in television. I'm not sure how and when it is. So at the youth level, perhaps we are making what we want to do now is to find, we've had, I think, 10 years of the National Science Week, where every August, I think we go to various provinces and have a range of activities for a week in the provinces just to get young students interested in science and technology. What I think we haven't done fairly well is the general public around the impact of science and technology, both the sophisticated people like ourselves, but also, as you say, you know, general public and constituencies that
we need to excite about science and technology. We do have examples of things that we've done at community level. Maybe we are not communicating them very, very well. The example that comes to mind, again, is a launch that our deputy minister has recently done. What is the name of the place in Transkei, Tommy, that you launched this project for accelerated service water delivery in partnership with the CSR?
It's called Mbelu in the Mbashe municipality in the Eastern Cape.
So that's a story that you can tell to your community in the Eastern Cape as one example. There are many others. Mr. Patel talked about the work that we are doing on agronomy, where we have funded projects for the development of some medicinal plants that can be planted at community level, processed at community level, and some of them, I think, have now small, medium enterprises that are coming out of this and exporting some of these to some of the firms abroad. But you're right, are we able to communicate what we do to the general public? And as I've said, I think there's a lot of work to be done in the area. Professor Abdelhaid, I wanted to talk about the breakdown of the numbers of the PhD, but as a rule of thumb, I think there's a rule at the NRF that we tend to fund 5% of students from the rest of the continent. So the assumption is that in those numbers, we should assume that 95% or 90% of the students would be South African students, just as a rule of thumb. And then on the GERD, as Imran has said, we'll rather cross expenditure on R&D. We will be finalizing this report, and we would rather come to the committee with really an analysis that shows what the challenges are and what the committee could do. But for the purposes of this meeting, we just wanted to flag this to the committee that the target that we had set out is not being reached, and then I did indicate the work that the minister is doing, where she's going to advise cabinet on increasing this to 1.4%. But and then to Honourable Lawrence Glopas, we are now really analysing why, at what rate the GDP has grown, and how much is our investment. That could be part of that presentation. But the second reason is that we do know that at some point, I'm not so sure where this is, was that the committee plays a very, very important role if it believes that the work that we are doing and the investments that you have voted to us are being utilized properly. To continue to say maybe we need to continue to get money for science and technology, but I can't put the words in the committee's mouth. It's up to you on any assessment of the work that we are doing with the public entities. Dr. Afda, you're comfortable. Thanks, Jim.
Just before your comment, because it's a follow-up from what you have said, the DG has just said that there is a role from NRF that it employs, it utilizes 95% for local and 5% for outside. When did that rule start? Because since I have been here, actually one of the frustrations of the former president of NRF, which he reported here to this committee, was the frustration of which I'm sure you're familiar with, about the SKA motivation for human capital development, where out of 23 scholarships that were given, 19 were given to white students, and the four were given to, actually three were given to Africans of Africa. Only one was given to a black student from South Africa, and he refused to sign that, and he came to say we must support him because he doesn't think that the motivation that has been done for SKA to develop human capital is really that dealt with properly in that fashion. And they said we're going to support him, and consequently he was then persecuted until he had to go back to America. So when did that all start? My input from the follow-up of Professor, you can then add up your own.
As a new member, sometimes I'd like to ask some questions, but it's in this document. But I get fitted here with all those chairs and what they are. I'm trying to check how many are at the University of Venda, how many are at Wusu, how many are, or maybe they are going to die because they are dying anyway. But anyway, I want us to share a proposal, DG, to the minister. That if you could abuse us as members of parliament, abuse us by having just a small package, assuming that you are going to Nagata with me. When I see that community in Nagata, please tell them that I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 packages. Just have something like that and give us, give to all of us. We are going to assist you to send your department to the community.
Thanks, Chair. We will organize that, and our communication expert has also taken note of that. I've got an update on, I agree with you, Chair. I think at the beginning with the SKA that was indeed the case, but we have recent numbers where out of 398 students in the SKA, 302 students are South African. And 70 of those students are foreign African national students. And in that 70, 26 are non-African. So the pattern has changed since, I think, I remember the point that you made when Professor Mzama Mangalisa was here. But I think I'll hand over to Professor Afterhide, who will talk about this policy, I think, that we've talked about of how to fund South African
Thank you, DG, Chair, and Professor Maya Tula. The patterns in which students are enrolled for masters and doctoral degrees are, of course, not the patterns in which we award bursaries. It is true that around about half of our doctoral students are foreign, and of the foreign students, more than half are from Africa. So it's true that there is this proportion as you were indicating. However, many of the NRF programs are very specifically targeted only or very, very largely at South African students. And in order to systematize a set of numerical guidelines for the NRF on how it should be distributing its funds, in terms of race and gender and national and foreign compositions of the student body, we have drafted an initial document which we are about to discuss with the minister to ensure that the minister is comfortable with this. This would be a guide to the NRF on the allocation of bursaries that would clarify for everybody then the exact context within which the DSC would want to fund postgraduate students in South Africa.
In other words, for now there is no rule, which DG was speculating on, that is 95% and 5%. It's all, you are still drafting a document which you need guidance.
No, I'll ask Danny to comment on this, but there are certain programs within the NRF, in fact, where bursaries are available only to South African students. So there's certain types of support programs where the bursaries are awarded only to South African students, and others where there's some flexibility around SKA, for example. So this document I'm talking about will be an overarching one, but there are currently rules that apply to different programs. I just don't know the details of all of them at the moment. I don't know if Danny might want to still add, but there are rules depending on the programs at present.
Chair, I think that is, I think that corrects status at the moment. That may not be different rules across the bursaries, but I think the funding framework, I mean, as DC, there's a rule of thumb which the NRF in some way already apply in general case, but I think the policy will sort of formalize the rules governing the disbursement of the bursaries.
And just the last comment from Professor Matula. We do not have the details of the breakdown of the research shares at the moment, but this is something that we could even ask the NRF to provide when they come to present tomorrow because they have all the stats.
I think let us agree that we have exhausted on this presentation our energies. You may as well I was wondering what is happening. Okay. Yeah, but thank you very much for the information to the committee. Yeah, you can brief us now on the SKA development. We don't want to hear it from newspapers. We want to hear from you. Actually, just now I have been approached by the media. We must say something about SKA, so we don't want to talk things that are authentic rather than media based. Okay, then.
Thank you, Chair. We'll be very brief, though. What I'm going to do is to present on three different aspects of the SKA in terms of the current status. The first one is just looking. Aspects. The one is in terms of the global SKA, but there we look specifically at the site decision process and some of the outcome scenarios that we're currently looking at. The second one is around the African SKA, but some of the new partnerships we've managed to strike, both from the global partnerships and the private sector partnerships. And then the third one is an update on some of the South African initiatives, specifically the Meerkat and what we're doing around protecting the astronomy reserves in the country.
You did present that before. What we, our interest here is the progress on the deed. It's the deed that we're interested in. We know the progress about SKA. We want,
okay.
We want the progress. Yeah,
okay. So then we'll just focus on this current slide that I've got up at the moment, the global development. There was a meeting in March 2012 where Canada was welcomed as a new member of the SKA organization. So currently there are 8 member countries. That includes Italy, UK, China, Netherlands, South Africa, New Zealand, and Australia. And we just learned that yesterday Germany had announced their joining of the SKA organization, so there are currently 9 members. So in terms of the BRIT process, there will be 7 members that will be voting. That excludes, sorry, 6 members that exclude South Africa, Australia, and New Zealand, that the interested parties. What actually happened in March as well is that the recommendation that came from the SKA Site Advisory Committee was distributed to the members. There was a meeting in April in the Netherlands, which the DG had attended. At that meeting, that's the board meeting, a number of issues was raised by Australia. I think there was about 7 or 8 issues that was raised by Australia. And of those issues, 2 were still unresolved, and those were referred to the SKA members. So if you look at the
the board members are the board members of the SKA organization, and those are represented by the 9 countries that I've just indicated. The member countries are essentially the same members, but represented by different members in terms of each country. So they're represented by the same 9 countries in terms of the members, but they're more at the political level rather than at the organizational level. So the members themselves are the body that will undertake the decision or make the final decision in terms of where the SKA will be cited, not the actual board, yes.
When you say they are represented by by political side, what does that mean?
Okay, on the SKA board, there's an SKA organization, and
right.
That's represented by an SKA board. And that board is represented by 9 countries. So each country has a representative that sits on the SKA board that oversees the functions of the SKA organization. But in terms of the process where the site decision is being made, that will be made by what is called the SKA members, which is represented by the same 9 countries, but more at the political level rather than the members that are represented on the board themselves, the SKA board.
Okay. Yeah, just explain it.
Let me explain this. We as South Africa are members of the SKA organization.
Right.
And because that is, in a sense, the people who will own the facility and they are funding the facility, they will make the decision of the site, they will make the decision of the funding. The board, if you like, is a small structure that just makes sure that the members' interest, like a board of a company, they are not the company, they are board that have to look at the interests of the shareholders. So we, South Africa, are therefore acting both as members, but we are also in the board. But when we attend the meeting of the members, I attend those meetings because of the interest of government and the funding that government has put in the SKA. So I'm representing the taxpayer in South Africa, so to speak, when I sit there and make decision. We in the organization can receive proposals from the board on things that they've deliberated on as a board. In the board, South Africa could be represented by NRF and the SKA organization. So I may not sit in the board meetings, but South Africa is represented not necessarily by the department, but by an organization such as NRF or the SKA. It's a very small distinction, but it's really to understand that the decision is made by members who represent governments and funders.
Okay.
And the board are responsible for making sure that the interests of the members is carried over, and they do the work in between the members' meetings.
Okay, then I get it.
It's like a shareholders' meeting, which can happen once or twice in a year with the members, and then you can have board meetings that could happen 4 or 5 times in a year. They deal with, if you like, assisting the company to make the decision.
Operational.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, Chair. Just to carry on, the April meeting that I mentioned earlier on, there was a decision that was taken to set up a scientific working group to essentially assess how to maximize on the historical investments to date by the site candidates. And what is agreed was that in a month's time, which is essentially in May, that the report will be received from the scientific working group, and that report will be tabled as inputs to the members where the site decision will actually be made. So there will be a follow-up meeting in May itself. Currently, there are 2 scenarios that we will be looking at. The one is an outright win, either South Africa or with the African partners, or Australia together with New Zealand. So that's the one scenario. The second scenario, and this is a scenario that we... that seems to be happening in the corridors, and it might come to fruition. We don't know. Is a shared SKA, but we still, in terms of how we're communicating, we're looking at an outright win. necessarily the shared scenario, but that is a possibility that we have to entertain if it comes to that. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable
Professor.
Chair, I believe that the committee did visit Carnarvon or the site. I went there this recess period all on my own. And I was quite surprised to see what it entails, this whole project. But now I need to understand, why wait until the 3rd or the 4th of April to decide to appoint a working group? You said nothing new to us this morning, really nothing new. Why then wait until, was it as a result of what Celia said about this possible leak of the recommendation of the advisory committee? What exactly is the reason? Because the whole world was expecting an announcement on the 4th of April. And there's a reason, and nobody is telling us that reason. Exactly why? Because why now an inclusive process? Not even the ministers really know exactly what this inclusive process entails. So please, be open to us if you can, if you do have the information. Because the media are very keen on having it, and we also are very keen on having it.
Yeah. Thanks, Chair. I attended the meeting, so I think I'm guilty as charged. The South Africa is a member, and being a member means you are part of a group of people who will eventually fund the project. The meeting, I think, that Val talks about in the United Kingdom, which was in Manchester, I think on the 19th of March, if I'm not being mistaken. This was a meeting where, after the SKA Siting Advisory Committee report was presented, the two countries were expected, and other members were expected, to make comment on the report. So that was the 19th. The report, in fact, had been released much, much earlier in February. So at that meeting in Manchester, the issues that were raised, in particular by Australia and New Zealand, were being responded to by the chair of the SKA Siting Advisory Committee, the SSAC, and the chair of the Siting Selecting Group, which had mapped out the process of how the bids would be analyzed. So the attempt at that meeting was to try and provide explanation to Australia on the issues that they had raised. So the meeting was a meeting where these concerns were addressed at a board meeting level on the 19th of March. So after the board received the responses from the two chairs, they then have the responsibility to transmit the outcome of that meeting to the members. And that is the meeting then that happened on the 4th of April for the members to decide how they want to then act on the responses that were provided to the issues that were raised by Australia. So there's nothing to hide, Honourable Klopas Lawrence. It's then up to the members to decide whether how they receive the report from the board. The time lag is because between the time the board meets and the time the members have to meet, people's availability comes into, you know, into, and then the members would decide it. Yes, we now are aware what the issues were. We are taking note of the responses by the chairs and the commentary from the board, which I think again is available on the SKA website, on what the chair and the board said on this issue. And then the members felt that, yes, ideally we are ready to make a decision, but we just want to do one more thing. we just want to set up a scientific working group that would look at the investments that have been made by the two candidate sides, countries, and whether there is any opportunity, feasibility of utilizing these investments for the benefit of the members. And I think, again, there is nobody who can stop the members from doing that, painful and frustrating as it is for all of us. But if the members vote, and as you know how decisions are made, and by majority that they want that process, there's nobody who can say no. So that's basically what happened. They felt, you know, we'll be putting a lot of investments over a long period of time. It may be perhaps not wise for us to ignore these investments that have been made by the two governments. Can we then just get a working group which will work in 4 weeks and advise us, is it feasible or not feasible? That's why I think Val is saying you would still, at the end of that process, could have an outright win scenario where the working scientific working committee comes back and says it's not feasible. It's feasible, but these are the cost implications. It's feasible, but this is the compromise to the science that you wanted to do on the SKA, and it's for the members then to say yes. Do we then want to compromise the science that the SKA wants to do? Are we prepared to pay 1.5 more for the instrument? No, we are not prepared. We just want one country, and therefore they then say which country then is the best. So the meeting that is coming up towards the end of May would then be receiving this report, discussing the report, and then hopefully after that make a recommendation as to how they would decide on which of the two bidding countries win. Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you very much. I hope Honourable Klopper, I agree with that. Right. Well, I think having exhausted all our energies on this, I can now conclude that we have already brainstormed the issues, and I hope that members are also happy with what they have had, and so you are also happy with what members have contributed, and we look forward to the next report as to what has happened with SKA bid. But I expected DG that you give some hope that insofar as the atmosphere is concerned around SKA there in Europe, it is pro-South Africa. I expected that you give that hope. And don't hide that it just depends on members of this state. There are no alignments of attitude. Because I'm from there, the alignment of attitude is that many people in Europe, they wanted to come to South Africa for two reasons. The first reason, they think that it would upstep the economic cooperation between Africa and Europe, in that South Africa is bringing 8 other countries from Africa into this project. Two, they also feel that South Africa is on the same skies as Europe rather than Australia. So it would be better if it is in South Africa, because they will not have to realign their radio telescopes to the southern skies of Australia. That is the feeling I discussed with them in Astron, the Netherlands. I discussed with even the vice president, or assisted by the vice president of the International Astronomical Union. So all of these people, they wanted to be here. They did say that there is a problem, as the DJ said, that Australia, because there is a technical committee which was formed, which said that South Africa is more ready technically than Australia. There is that, and which made Australia to boil. And then Australia started to go political, in that outside the board there is this political representation which we just talked about. And so they advised us when I was there. that we need, therefore, to also have a political offensive, because right now it's mobilizing politically. In other words, it's going to state presidents who are funding the project. As you see, we are losing. People are not taking into consideration this or that or that, you know, in terms of now world alignment and superpowerness. So, but otherwise, South Africa is in good books. Set with the sky, they say our skies are very, very super for them.
See, just one short question.
Yeah.
The minister, as well as her, as Mr. Chris Evans, the Minister of Science and Technology in Australia, both indicated that they're not really interested in sharing the bid. What will happen if we hear at the end of May that we should share the bid? Will we continue, or will we stick to our mere cut, or what will the reaction of South Africa be?
The problem is that the permutations, if there is a feasibility, are quite broad. And therefore, sharing is a perhaps too generic a word. So the short answer is we'll have to wait until the recommendations of the working group come. And also look at whether the cutting-edge science that was originally proposed by the SKA would still be achieved. You can have a political compromise, but you may compromise the science. And everybody says no matter what you do, they've bought into the SKA because of the breakthroughs and the science that it will make. So that still remains, I think, an overarching guide into these processes. We don't know what it means. And again, I'm not sure what the minister would do at that stage, but you're right, I mean, they both said they didn't think, based on the science, that it would be good for science if the telescope is built.
But there is a concern that the Astronomical Union must not be divided in any decision that is going to be taken. There is a precaution that whatever decision that is made, it must not compromise the future investment markets. There are groups of countries that, like Italy, I have understood, which is pro-Australia because of some arrangement that they've done on market level. And many others there. So this is also a consideration, therefore, that if whatever decision is taken, it must not compromise the future market relations of the Astronomical Union. These are some of the things that I gathered when I was there. So that is why they have taken a precaution. Remember, TGI, I told you before you went there that it's not going to, decision is not going to be taken. It's going to be postponed because these are considerations. And indeed, when you went there, you fired it. So that's what happened. So there are many things that are taken into consideration at this level because they say this is a 50-plus year investment. They need to take a very precautionary measure in announcing the winner, you know, of this. Anyway, that's it. I think let us conclude at this level. Thank you very much for coming. And we hope we will remember you have some three assignments which you must address to the committee sooner than later. Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for coming. As I said, honorable members, I think we just need to quickly discuss the question of Rio conference. We had asked the secretary to update us about the progress on our July trip to South Korea and Bulgaria. And we received a letter from our embassy, which is saying that unfortunately they only had their election last week in South Korea, so they have not, therefore there has not yet been a decision. Yes, but they've submitted our request for July, so they will now hear from them once they've posted the new government, because they were not sure who was going to win. So the election was only last week, so I think as it is now, they are busy constituting the new government in accordance with the outcome of the election. So they are saying, they will, let me read the letter quickly. It comes from our South African embassy in Seoul. It's dated 10 April 2012. It's addressed to the Director, Europe and African Division, International Office, National Assembly Secretariat, Republic of Korea. And it then says, dear Division Director, the delegation for the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology of the National Assembly of the Republic of South Africa is planning to visit Korea for a study tour from 30th of July to the 3rd of August 2012. The delegation is hoping to meet with their counterparts and related institutions during their visit to Korea. If this is acceptable, we will forward you the details regarding the content of the program for discussion. Our main aim is to determine the acceptability of the date as a first step in our preparation. Therefore, we would like to request the National Assembly of the Republic of Korea for the confirmation of the date in this regard. That is then from our embassy to the Korean people. So that's where it's then. So we will then update you as to the response from there once they have responded. The second one, this is a meeting, yeah.
Chairperson, still on Korea, I think this was the second application or request. What I'd like to find out is whether we did, as a committee, I'm not sure whether it's a committee or as parliament, write a letter of apology to them, since they were expecting us sometime early this year, which I thought it was supposed to be our first step to apologize for not having honored for not having maybe went there as they were expecting us, and maybe state reasons why we couldn't go, although we don't go into details, but just as a courtesy to apologize. That's what I want to say.
All right. Would you like?
No.
Okay.
Because I would have also written that in the future, there is a range of things. We didn't confirm the different candidates, but you were waiting.
No. What the member is saying, we made an application which the Korean accepted for the January, but we did not receive funding or approval, and that is why we didn't go. In fact, the Koreans were expecting us in the January application, if I'm not mistaken, but we did not We didn't go there not because they refused or because they didn't visit, but it is because our parliament did not approve our application. Yeah.
Hey, when we can only formalize anything with any country once we have that approval. So what we just do is we notify them or we let them know through our embassy. I let them know this is the committee's intention, this is the date, but we are awaiting for approval. So they won't move if there is an approval. So there was nothing formal, really.
Okay. So when we apply, we only confirm once there is approval.
Yeah. They don't
organize
anything if they don't have something that says
parliament
is
going to
pay for this.
Mm.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
I've been under the impression that our trip was approved but subsequently cancelled. So that's the impression that I've
been. No, it wasn't approved.
Oh, it was never approved?
No, it wasn't. It was. It was approved by the chair when we went as a committee to say we want to go on the earlier than July, earlier than the slot that was there in the program. It was approved, it is fine, but later, then we received that it was. No, it was approved, yes, I think she's right, it was approved initially. And then it was put on hold. Yeah, so once it was approved, then another arrangements were supposed to have been done.
Actually, that's the technical part, that's the political approval, but all people want to see is where's your money before we can make any arrangement, basically. So then, after that approval, there's a funding approval involved. Now, before we could even submit that, they said, you must put your trip on hold because there isn't funds. So, I mean, it wasn't finalized with the Koreans at all.
Okay. So, therefore, the July one now, because technically, we were told that it has been approved. So, well, how far are we, therefore, with funding approved? Because we don't want it again to come into the same scenario.
Okay, now the approval was given, they said ours is basically approved because we submitted, so it's on the basis of that. The problem now with the committee is because the committee wants to add possibly Bulgaria, and I did some getting some quotations for that travel. Now then it's going to mean we're going to have to submit a new application to Parliament. They had asked that we do it this week when Mr. Frolic was back. Because this now happened at the end of our session last time, and there was a recess period, so we're only back this week. So they said if we want to submit a new application, then we must do it this week. Now, what I've asked along the agents was to look at, you know, what is the best way forward in terms of how much it's going to cost the committee, which I've got today, and it looks like it's going to cost, because Bulgaria is there and South Korea is there, and if you want to do two countries at the same time, it's going to cost maybe just for air tickets, like in the 90,000 per member, per person, to do that two countries. So I can submit that application, but if it goes over the million, I'm sure, yeah, it's going to be just a back and forth. So I'm not sure if the committee wants to make a decision about that and maybe send a delegation to Bulgaria at another stage, but because if it's going to implicate the applications that's already standing for which we have approval. So it's going to move that application from 700,000 now to over a million if we go on the prices that we got quoted from the agent. I'm not sure. I didn't need to bring this out to the committee. I was going to want to talk to you first.
Yeah, but even though it was approved, what was said there in our last meeting was that we still need to do the application, the new application, because the cost may have changed,
yeah.
Even if we are going to call it. The cost course, may have changed at the time when we booked. Therefore, they certainly will still therefore need to do an application, but that application will only be for the facilitation for new crisis rather than approval. The approval is pending, but it needs the funding of approval. Yeah. So what do members want to what do we do about the indeed, actually, if I listen to Shana, they may use this technicality now to stop us even going there. That you didn't go there, it was not our fault, but we included another trip, and so the parliament didn't have money.
Yeah, but we should give the reasons why Bulgaria is now all of a sudden part of it, because our ambassador actually invited us.
Yeah.
So we should motivate actually why we want to actually fly via Bulgaria to Korea.
Yeah, but you see, that is true. That is what we said. And, but what Chanel is raising here is that may compromise the pre-approval mechanism in that they are now going, because it's not that they like it, but it's because they were pressurized. And there was now even the deputy minister there where they had to say that no, there was nothing wrong, but the thing is there was no funding, but now funding again is available. So it is approved, therefore, so we can go ahead. Now, what Chana is saying is that if we then have this one, because indeed they are always reluctant to approve anything beyond a million, they may say that, no, your trip was basically approved, but you included another thing, and that is why it became disapproved. And then, again, it's canceled, not now Bulgaria, but everything. So, what channels say that let us apply separately to Bulgaria with the motivation that you're talking about, and let us take this one that is already approved for Seoul so that it is not compromised, and make another one that this one is not from us but it's from the ambassador. You see, I think channels has it correct insofar as I think in that level, that we make a separate one. This one motivated by the fact that it is the ambassador who wants us there because of the celebrations of the 20th diplomatic relation. They may say that the ambassador must invite us, probably she will, in her own funding. Now, I think we must separate them so that we do not get compromised. What do you say, members? Yeah, applause.
Chairperson, I think also that the second application of Bulgaria, before Shana submitted, wouldn't it be wise for the chairperson to sit with this who is responsible for this, just to explain the motivation in person first, although it's going to be submitted in writing. Maybe if the chairperson sits with that person and explains the importance of this one, you might say, no, submit and motivate further.
Yeah, Mr. Frolic, the House Chair. That we go, and motivate with this one. Now, here is this one. We were thinking that we could, when we go to South Korea, and also include this one, probably the embassy may sponsor us, we do not know, but how about this, and get it from him.
Now, I think it's a three-stop ticket there. Might even be less expensive.
Sorry?
This opportunity of, I think it's a three-stop ticket there, might be less expensive than the usual airfares. Yeah. There's always a possibility to negotiate the price of a three-stop ticket. It's not a new concept.
Yeah.
Not at all.
So, I think, Shanaz, go ahead and negotiate with your travel agent about...
Okay, there are a couple of options here. Oh, what are they?
Yes.
Tell us.
Concept of a three-stock ticket.
Yeah, like a and it varies. I mean, the whole 141 would be probably the most expensive one, the Cape Town Joburg people for segment.
Okay, so what do members say?
That's normally the most expensive ticket.
Cape Town Joburg.
You showing pencils?
Huh?
Can't we use our entitlements to all go to Joburg?
Joburg,
That's sedition.
So that it is cheaper. Yeah. I don't catch you. You said the most expensive part is from Cape Town to Joburg. Now members are saying that why therefore that we all start from Joburg so that those that are from Cape Town to cut that express. And that day you use our parliamentary voucher. Before I go and negotiate with Mr. Frawley, explore these two options. One of the living from Joburg, two, Bulgaria being funded by the embassy because it doesn't want us to be there. They can't expect us to fund us. And then get the prices, and then let me take those prices to go and negotiate with Mr. Frawley. Yeah.
Chairperson, sorry, I just have a question. You can tell me if I'm out of order. But considering the bureaucratic process that Shanaz has to go through in terms of application, does the committee already have confirmation from the ambassador that's inviting you that they will cover all costs?
Because
that's the first thing they're going to ask for.
No, she must explore that. That's what we're saying. She must explore with the embassy. Are they going to accommodate us if we have a trip to South Korea?
But we are planning to wire there, but Parliament is not prepared to pay for that. Are they going to pay for our accommodation when we park there? That's what we need. So that they should tell us. Once we know that, then they will. Then we have a Congress presentation to the House Chair. Okay.
You've mentioned a certain date, a certain time in the letter. It's from the 18th of July until? I didn't get it properly. So it's the 30th until the 3rd. Only a few days, 3-4 days.
No,
so. Oh, that's fine. Okay. In other words, in total? Oh, I see. But in total, then, how many days?
8 days.
In other words, starting from? We just need to keep it in mind in our diary. The Saturday to the Saturday. Thank you.
Okay, you're right. Okay, that's it. Now, before we discuss also this, there is a this letter comes from the minister. It's about the NRF board. There has been appointed a new board. But it seems that the chair who was identified apologized for the post, declined, in other words. And now they have appointed a new chair who has accepted. Now the minister wants us to approve this as a matter of procedure by the Act. The appointment must be done in consultation with the Committee of Parliament. So, this is the person who was initially appointed is the former CEO of NRF who declined. Then there is now Professor Bauer, Ahmed Bauer, who has now been newly been identified. And he has accepted the position. Professor Bauer is, let me just one please. Okay, let me quickly read this because I'll circulate this for him afterwards, but for the purpose of this meeting. This is from the minister. He is writing to the speaker. Honorable Matsuru. Say, dear Honorable Speaker, presentation of the potential candidate to serve as chairperson of the National Research Foundation Board. Cabinet concurred with the appointment of the National Research Foundation, NRF Board, for a period of 3 years, effective 1st of October 2011. Dr. Khotsom Mkhena was recommended as a chairperson of the board, however, he declined. His appointment. That is the one who is the former CEO of NRF. I appointed Professor Robin Crew as an interim chairperson of the NRF board until the process of appointing a permanent chairperson is complete. Section 6.1a of the NRF Act stipulates that the chairperson of the board should be appointed by the minister. The process of searching for a permanent chairperson has been completed, and Professor Ahmed Bauer has been identified as a potential candidate to fill the vacancy on the NRF board. Professor Ahmed Bauer is a Vice Chancellor and Principal of the Durban University of Technology. He is a theoretical physicist. Until August 2010, he was Professor and Distinguished Lecturer of the Department of Physics and Astronomy at Hunter College and a member of the Doctoral Faculty at the Graduate Center, City University of New York. He was awarded the Foundation for Research and Development, FRD, scholarship an FRD President Award and has won numerous other scholarships and awards. Professor Bauer holds a PhD in theoretical physics, MSc in theoretical nuclear physics, obtained with cum laude, BSc honors in theoretical physics, and BSc in mathematics and physics. It is against this background that I wish to request the Portfolio Committee of Science and Technology consideration of the proposed candidate for the chairperson of the NRF Board as contemplated in Section 62C of the NRF Act. The full curriculum shape of Professor Bauer is attached. I am confident that his expertise, skills, and experience will assist the board in its work. Yours sincerely, DNM Pando. So yes, this is the CV, which I cannot translate to the mind. So that's what we are supposed to end on as a committee. We are agreed. Any comments?
Was he the vice chair?
No,
vice chancellor of the university,
yeah.
Yes, but of the board.
No. The new board.
It's a new board,
it's
yes.
It's a new board.
Okay.
He's just been appointed.
As a member?
I think he was part of the members, but with the decline of the chairperson was identified. Then they have appointed him there.
The question I asked, was he initially been the vice chair of the board and automatically asked to act as the chair? That's the only question I actually asked. No.
I don't think that there is a vice chair there. There's just a chair in the board. So the chair of the board who has been identified was the one who has declined. So instead of it, and they are appointing people. Yes, Honourable Manager.
Mr. Sumasi, must be one of the applicants, and how many applicants did he apply to?
Was he one of the applicants for what? For the chairperson?
Chair, I think maybe I would also send this publicly because not yet referred, so should we not wait till the formal referral in the ATC to see exactly what we must do and then make the decision? Secondly, also, I think the NRS board is one of the boards where the minister has maybe. I think we reported on that last time because they gave already when the board was appointed, one of those boards where the committee actually has very little power to do anything. We basically just, whatever we say is not going to make
The Act of the NRF Board Act is one, there are three categories in the appointment of board. They are governed by the Act in which the Committee of Parliament takes full responsibility, the first category, takes full responsibility of shortlisting and appointing the board without any, like, in SAPC, the Communication Portfolio Committee does everything here. Then, the second category is the one that governs the HSRC Act of appointing the board. That one is where the minister appoints a board in consultation with the Committee of Parliament. And this was covered by us after the experience, the bitter experience from the NRF Act. Because the previous board, we had rejected two names, but the minister continued, not this one, the former minister, continued to appoint those people regardless of us. And that is when we understood, when we took the matter to the Secretary of National Assembly, that we are very frustrated and disappointed about the act of the minister disregarding our recommendations and not even telling us it, because he ended up not even coming back to us. We saw it on the paper that indeed is what the minister has done and did not take heed of what we had said. And that's when we're given this booklet, which shows how these boards are appointed. So they put these three categories, and they said, so unfortunately, the NRF Act allows the minister to do what he did. Now, what you need to do, you need to change and amend this act so that you have a say, and that is when the HSRC when the HSRC board was to be appointed and we had to amend the HSRC Act and we put it with this stringent now that we want category 2 where we don't want to shortlist like the competition, but we want that after the minister has shortlisted, but he must give us all the we must see all the shortlisting, how it went about, and we must approve it. So it must be in consultation with us. And then there is the NRF board is governed by the after consultation. So then the secretary of the national said, if it is after consultation, it means that the minister must just can tell you, he's only seeking our opinion, but not necessarily he or she will endorse our opinion. It allows him to simply, or her to simply appoint without even taking your consent. And so that is why we have always therefore argued that a parliament must come with one kind of a common approach that all committees must appoint boards with one piece for popular category 2. Or if it is like category 1, which is the communication type, but it shouldn't be that one board in the same system, in particular like science and technology, we have NRF board which governed by a certain type of category. Then actually many of these entities have also complained that why? Because they don't want the committee to be part of this. So they like to appoint boards without the committee's consent. So they actually fought for a year after we had put it like this. But finally, we stood by our thing. We convinced the people at the NCOP that this is why we did this, because of the experience in NRF Act. And so at the end, they had to go with it, but even today they are still not happy about how it is worded, actually including the minister, because they can't do what they like. But here they can do what they like with this act. So she's only telling us really whether we can say no, she can still continue and appoint. So what Shanaz is saying is therefore that even if we can say we want to know the details, it still will not help, because if she has decided that she wants that, there's nothing we can do until we change the act to be in consultation with the committee. Yes, Professor.
I'm just following her. Has it been referred to us?
No.
If not, what is the hurry of? Truth of the matter, we don't have much to say. You can say yes, even tomorrow. But I'm just following the technical way of doing it.
Yeah, no.
The HSC has not been referred by HSC. Why do we have to discuss it now?
Yeah, no, that's true, but I was just explaining to her that even after it has been referred to the HSC, it's still the same thing. That it's something that we shouldn't even worry about, because in any event, the minister will still take the final decision.
And I propose that we accept it in anticipation of ATC.
Sorry?
I propose that we accept this proposal of Yeah.
In anticipation of the HSC that is going to come. So that is one thing.
That's okay, yeah.
Because we don't have much power in. Let's accept that the HSC.
Yeah, once
so
the HSC comes,
we just pass it to a seven.
I think so. That's the point of discussion now, that we, after it has been properly processed through ATC, we need simply to end up it because there's no way. And anything we can do, it is to recall the act and change it. Yes. Right? So, Connor. Okay. Thanks. That's it. The last one, honorable members, tomorrow, at 2, we are supposed to attend at V454 five members who I think will from this committee. Eight committees that are in the climate change category must have five members who will be going to Rio de Janeiro in June. So tomorrow is a briefing of that, and it seems that four committees have not submitted their five members and have been requested that tomorrow I must submit five members. Myself, the Science and Technology, Rural Development, I can't remember the other two. But there are four committees which are outstanding, who have not submitted, the names of the their participants who will be going to Rio de Janeiro in June. There is a WSSP in June in Rio. The one called Rio Plus 20. So now here we are supposed to appoint five members. And the formula is that two must be from the opposition and three from the ANC. Let me hear now. Professor, and then
Mr. Mucho. That's to clarify my status here. I'm in two committees. I don't even know which one I'm full-time on. So if you consider that, maybe put me last in the list. I'm saying I'm in higher education. I'm in science technology. I don't know which one I'm full time, which one I'm alternate. So when you make your decisions, I wouldn't mind you put me last in the list.
Okay. All right. Mucho?
Just wanted the chairperson to clarify us on this SS. What?
WSSP.
Yes.
No, it's about climate change. It's to do with climate change and environment. That is one that we had sometimes, you know, do you remember the WSSG was in 2005 in Johannesburg? Yeah, the World Summit on Sustainable Development. I'm not sure whether five includes me, but it says there, kindly remind your chairperson to forward the names of five members to participate in the preparatory dialogue scheduled to take place on 19 April 2012. We need to finalize all our logistics for the event, including the dinner. No, Shara's saying that is this five, does it include the chair or the chair is the sixth? Yeah, five members.
Thank you, Chair. My proposal is that we're going to have one from DA, one from COPE, three from ANC.
Yeah.
Then from there, chairperson. From there, those who are not in that list of that tour.
Which tour?
Study tour. That study tour.
Which
tour?
who are not there?
We must fulfill.
Who are not in that list? I didn't know there are people who are not in the list.
No, we must decide on saving
What's the time now?
Lunchtime,
right? Oh, okay. This is the last one. Like
yeah,
yeah. All of this were necessary, unfortunately. Sorry for that. No. It's up to 3 o'clock. So we will have to reorganize our time that finishes at 2. So that we are able to go there. Shanaz will organize that it finishes at 2.
Okay. We'll see how we can do it. Yes, he is for tonight. It's yourself, it was the work, the Salon Line, Chumi. That time it was Shin, so I'm sure you're going to go with another place. Smith and Clyde. That's the thing we applied for. Clear.
For the talk. So who are not here?
I'm not here.
Okay, at least for now, the three members, the three members that are not in the list of the tour is Nzazi, Nongonyane, and Mayatu for the double SST.
And in 2004,
yeah. So myself, I'll be the fourth.
Okay.
See, Mark Pocky has a policy that the shadow minister should go if there's only one that's going. So unfortunately, it will have to be me. That's the policy of my party.
Okay.
And seeing that my deputy, Mrs. Juanita, I'm Junita and she's Juanita.
Mm-hmm.
I know the difference is only she's very sick at the moment. She's got a brain tumor. Yes. She was appointed as a member of this committee last week.
Okay.
But she won't really be functional for at least the next month.
There was one that was appointed before.
That was Dr. Marnie van Dyk. Do you remember there was a case regarding his travel plans and so on? But he was innocent, found innocent, but that changed. That's amounting to appropriations. So he's not on the committee. It's Mrs. Juanita Spillane, she's on sick leave, but the policy of my party is if there's only one place, the shadow minister should go, which is me.
Okay.
It's not that I want to stand below, it's the policy.
Right.
Thank you.
So then it will be you and the Blatchy from opposition, because there must be two of you. Right. So that's how it is. Sorry?
I think this committee
only
needs to know that
the DFS is going whoever. Yeah. It is for them to decide who is going amongst themselves. Yeah. But now the problem. Sorry.
Are we going to think of the five person?
No, they. That's what we need to be. Yeah. So tomorrow, therefore, those members that is Ndanzi, Nonkonyane, sorry? Yeah, but that's what I was saying. I was reading this, man.
Yeah, sorry, but I...
It's not six.
No, it's not six.
Oh.
Yes.
No, put him. Put him. Because, yeah. I know why. Put him. Put him. Put him there. And inform him because. He's not today. That is going for that ceremony. Okay, honorable, yeah, that's it. I think tomorrow, then from here we'll finish. We'll try and finish at 2, and then we go there with those members to this briefing.
How long will it take? Would it be an hour meeting because we will have to change our travel
arrangements? I really don't know. They didn't say how long it's going to be, but they are saying that we must participate in the preparatory dialogue scheduled to take place tomorrow. No. They are, the four portfolios are the one that have outstanding names that have not been submitted. That's which we must come tomorrow to submit these names. I think there are 8 portfolios that are in this climate. It's rural development, it's agriculture, it's human settlement, it's energy, the environment, science and technology, I think it's finance, I can't remember the 8 ones. Yeah. So it's a big delegation because each of them must bring, I think, 5.
4, 5, 4.
Yeah, 3, 4, 5, 4. We'll move together from this meeting, from the briefing.